So the other day, we learned that the third trial, a bench trial in the January 6th case, was an acquittal because this dude was like, yo, Your Honor, this cop led me in. And the judge was like, look at that. The cop let him in. Huh. And then there you go. Case dismissed. The guy's acquitted of basically everything. Well, of course, many on the left were still pretending like that never happened. And now we have another story. So you know those guys that were accused of trying to kidnap Whitmer? Yeah, well, two of them have been acquitted and the others have received a mistrial. So that whole narrative is imploding. The narrative there is basically that these guys were claiming they were just stoned and talking BS. And these feds were like, yeah, 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 it's all real. It's all real. And then brought that to a criminal trial. But of course, I don't know if it really matters because the media got their narrative of the evil far right trying to kidnap a governor, which turns out to be mostly bunk. So we'll talk about all that. And we have this tweet. It was from the guys over at Mythicist. It's a Bill Maher episode from, I think, 2019, where Dennis Prager is saying that the left is lying, men can't menstruate. And everyone on the show laughs at him. And Bill Maher says, you're crazy. So considering the laws that are being passed, we have the governor of Alabama just signed a law banning medical intervention for children if they're deemed trans by a doctor. I want to show proof that Dennis Prager was right, and I think we got to call out Bill Maher a little bit. Look, I know a lot of people are happy that he calls out the left when he does, but if the dude actually did cursory Google searches on half this stuff, it would be a whole nother ball game. You'd have people being like, "Wow, you know, I watched that guy and he's informed me," but he doesn't. A week after Covington, Bill Maher still got the story wrong when everyone else had already corrected. So no leeway from me on what's going on with him. But we'll talk about all that. Layoffs are expected at CNN and other networks because it's a big merger. Food riots and fuel riots in Peru already because expect things to get pretty bad. So we'll talk about that and then maybe we'll get to it. Will Smith has been banned from the Oscars. But that's not really what I really care about. What I care about is a story that apparently his wife was like saying she cried when she got married because she didn't want to marry him.
Wow.
Yeah, talk about a creepy
what a
story.
Horrible thing horrible. To say
Did
about
you see
your husband.
The video. But, of, yeah, we'll get into it later.
We'll get into all of this. And joining us to talk about this is Orrin McIntyre. How's it going, man?
Hey, man. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Do you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. I run a YouTube channel, Orrin McIntyre. You can just search it up over there. I do a lot of explaining of political theory and then interviews, you know, news of the day, that type of stuff too. But it's mostly about political theory. And then I make memes on Twitter, which is what a lot of people know me from. So.
Well, there we go. You want to do me a favor? Can you throw that on the shelf behind you? There you go.
Also, there you Magic go, the Gathering player, if I'm not mistaken. We were talking a little bit
before. Oh, see, now you're outing me, but yeah.
a little black red.
It's true.
Magic the Gathering player. Seamus is instantly offended.
That's right. I'm like, get out of here, all of you. Bunch of nerds.
Witchcraft.
Seamus plays
It's not
green.
Just witchcraft. It's nerds. You guys are nerds. You know, as I tell people, you know, my parents didn't let me read Harry Potter not because of the demonic elements. They just didn't want me to be a nerd.
That's
they didn't
fair.
Want to be one of those Harry Potter kids.
That's fair.
And didn't want you to get shoved in a locker, and you appreciate that
exactly.
a lot.
Yeah. They're like, this kid doesn't need any help getting bullied, all right?
No, we're not
letting them read Harry Potter.
Bro, based on this generation, I'd argue you were more likely to get bullied for not reading it. The bully would be like, what did you think of Snape?
I know. They're like, what house are you? This guy's not a Gryffindor. I was like, oh, shut up, please. This is the worst. I am Seamus Coughlin. I run a YouTube channel called Freedom Tunes. We do animated political satire. We upload a new video every Thursday. We just uploaded one this past Thursday. I think you guys are really going to enjoy it. We might get wild and upload two next week. I don't know. We'll see.
Snap. He speaks the truth. Ian Crossan, what's up, everybody? Catch you soon.
Yeah, I'm very excited. Seamus' Freedom Tunes is awesome, and we're going to be in Nashville next week, and Orrin is fantastic. It's going to be a great evening. Let's get going.
Yeah, actually, right after the show tonight, we're running out the door, driving straight to Nashville. We've got the mobile command center already on the way, and we're going to be parked in their parking lot for the next week with a variety of their talent, and there's a whole lot of crazy stuff we're planning. We'll see how much we can actually pull off, but it'll be a lot of fun. We're going to have a lot of people from the Daily Wire on the show next week. It's going to be Timcast Live from the Daily Wire in Nashville. So we'll see you then. But for now, let's jump over to timcast.com. Before we get started, become a member, help support our work. We have this story that we're going to get into in a second about these two guys, these two people accused who have been found not guilty. As a member, you are helping support all of that great journalism, and you will also get access to exclusive segments of this podcast Monday through Thursday at 8 p.m. We have a huge library of content, so you definitely check out all of that stuff. You'll love a lot of these videos. Not so family-friendly, Lots of swearing. Hmm. Yesterday we had a deep discussion with Andrew Klavan on religion, which was very, very interesting. He had to leave a little bit early, but it was a fun conversation. So don't forget to join at timcast.com. Smash that like button, subscribe to this channel, share the show with your friends. Let's read this, the first story here from timcast.com. Breaking. Two men accused of Governor Whitmer kidnapping plot found not guilty. Two others receive mistrial. The jury deliberated for 5 days following a 2-week trial. I'm going to mention on April 8th, the jury found Daniel Harris not guilty of one charge of kidnapping conspiracy, one count of conspiracy to use a weapon of mass destruction, one count of possession of an unregistered destructive device, one count of possession of an unregistered short-barreled rifle. Harris was the only one of the four defendants who testified in his own defense. Brandon Caserta, who was charged with one count of kidnapping conspiracy, was also found not guilty. The jury declared a mistrial on the charges brought against Barry Croft Jr. and Adam Fox. The charges include kidnapping conspiracy, conspiracy to use a weapon of mass destruction, and possession of an unregistered destructive device. The U.S. government claimed the men had been planning to kidnap Whitmer at her vacation home prior to the 2020 election and arrested them in October of 2020. All four men have denied the government's accusations. Didn't it turn out that like the majority of people involved in this were feds or some kind of informant?
Yeah.
Like it wasn't even like an actual plot. Let me show you this from the Daily Mail. They say how undercover FBI agents infiltrated militia group Wolverine Watchmen to try to take down Gretchen Whitmer's kidnappers. They say, what do they call it? Stoned talk. They said it was nothing but stoned talk that the government turned into a real conspiracy.
Wow.
Schwerz and Bates both testified at trial. So look, without getting into, you know, hashing out the entirety of the trial, the story's been, I think for most people, fairly obvious. As soon as they said, yeah, it was a bunch of FBI agents that seemed to have been orchestrating the whole thing and then blaming these guys who are bumbling along for the FBI's own plan. Along with this story and the story about January 6th, where the third trial, this guy was like, the cops opened the door and let me in. The judge went, yeah, the video shows the cops opened the door and let you in. Not guilty. The media narrative on what? Insurrection, the rise of the far right. It's all just bunk BS.
Yep.
Bunk BS. Panel, would you agree?
Yeah, I mean, I would tend to agree. The entire narrative started falling apart a couple months ago. And honestly, when it was first reported as a story, I remember watching my television, regrettably checking Twitter, saying, wow, this is really horrible. And for the people who are actually committing legitimate acts of violence and breaking in, yes, that's bad. I think we all agree that's criminal. But I should have known that the media was spinning this, trying to make it out to be something it wasn't. They started to refer to it as an insurrection, which is interesting because it's an insurrection where basically no one who went, the vast majority of people, didn't have weapons on them to try to overthrow the government. Just a very bizarre narrative, but I think people were too afraid to question it because they didn't want to seem in support of it because our media spent so much time calling it a terroristic act.
I just tweeted out earlier that I don't trust screenshots, pictures, or video anymore. Mm-hmm. I don't trust it, man. Yeah. I don't trust the narrative. I don't trust the media. It's going to be even hard for me to trust people face-to-face, which I really don't anyway. But, man, I don't want to get tainted on humanity here, but I'm not buying any of this crap anymore.
Well, I hear you, but you're not necessarily getting tainted on humanity. I think it's okay to acknowledge that known liars are known liars and you shouldn't listen to them without having a pessimistic view of humans in general.
I think you shouldn't trust cartoonists.
Here's the thing, and now I would disagree. I think, well, in most instances, that's probably correct, but there are a few good apples.
Yeah.
I think.
That's exactly what an animator would say.
I know, right?
Seamus, if you have a bowl of M&Ms and 10 of them are poison, take a handful. Not all bad apples.
Hold on a second, Tim. That's ridiculous. First and foremost,
that proves it, Seamus.
M&Ms are all bad. They're sugary. Yes, they'll kill you. You shouldn't be eating that stuff.
What do you think, Orin? You think that there's some value to this, the media narrative at the moment?
Well, I think you're in a situation where you obviously had a situation where people wanted to expand the power of the government, where people wanted to expand the power of the security state. Mm. You wanted these people to be dangerous. We've seen the fallout from this. They've been purging the military of people who have any kind of connection to Trump, any kind of support, any, you know, if you were an NRA member, you could be on a watch list if you were in the military, because of this and possibly up for being removed. So I think this is part of a larger interest by kind of those in power to make sure that you have the apparatus that is able to crack down on people. And we hear this all the time from the media, right? The biggest national security threat is, you know, the white supremacists, these radicals, you know, these crazy QAnon people. This is constantly being pushed for a reason because it allows you to kind of take that war on terror apparatus and shift it domestically. And I think that, you know, this isn't, I don't think that that's, this is the only part of it, but I think that that leads into that narrative for a reason.
But you know that the response from many Democrat activist types is just, they're flabbergasted. How is it that fascists are getting away with all of this? Because even when it's proven in a court of law to not be true, they just say it is. So I feel like regardless of whether or not the state is empowered by this, they got what they wanted. Hardcore hyper polarization in this country. The Democrat activists are still going to continue to be radicalized by these fake news stories. The acquittals in the January 6th case and here do nothing to change that.
Well, when you control the, you know, consensus-making apparatus, there's no reason to back off the story, right? Mm-hmm. If you continue to push it, it doesn't matter what the facts were at the end of the day. You control the flow of information. Just, and if you can continue to blast that out, then, you know, someone who really wants to dig into it can eventually find it, but the vast majority of people aren't going to do that. And so the narrative that is, you know, sitting in people's minds is that this went down, everything, you know, went down the way it was originally portrayed. No one goes back and looks at these things, you know, years after the fact to figure out if that was actually the case, and they end up taking the win.
I was just watching a bunch of documentary on the rise of the Nazi Party in 1933, Hitler's appointing of Goebbels to be the propaganda, and what was he, the Enlightenment Minister, some crazy title. And they just, they seized the radio. They took control of it. They shut down slowly over time. First, the book burning, which is in the schools. The professors were like, hey, kids, don't wait for the government to make this policy. Just go out there and destroy the knowledge now, the non-German stuff. So the kids were all like, yay, we think we're doing something good. And then when they got a hold of the radio, man, talk about manipulation. They shut down the other channels. You couldn't get anything out in Germany if it wasn't state propaganda.
Control of information. But the issue is, even with the internet grants you the ability to manipulate, but also for the opportunity for truth, like people watching this show right now. I think the difference between the people who watch this show versus the people who watch Young Turks is that for Timcast IRL listeners, new information will change their mind. For the Young Turks viewers, new information must be fake news and they'll completely ignore it. So like this story, like January 6th, they just act like the revelation didn't happen at all. And so it almost feels like the media narrative is irrelevant at this point. You know, they could say anything and these people would just be like, we don't care. We'll do whatever you say no matter what the story is.
That's called mass formation psychosis, I think.
I guess, yeah. We call it mass formation
cognitive
psychosis.
Cognitive dissonance. There's different ways to describe the mental
cult
failure or, yeah, the pitfall.
I love these. There was a comic someone posted on Facebook and it's a woman reading a newspaper and it says, you know, Russia claims there's no invasion. And she's like, how could people fall for this Russian propaganda? And then there's a guy in a MAGA hat with Q on his shirt watching Tucker Carlson screaming about a bunch of straw man narratives from the left. And I just thought it was so funny. I'm like, this comic is irony. It said U.S. bioweapons labs was one of the things. And I was like, that's not the argument. The argument is biological research labs. The left made that up and then got mad about it. And so that comic to me was particularly hilarious because they're mocking the right for being indoctrinated. But the comic itself was indoctrinating them. It was just pure irony. Because those arguments were all straw man arguments. They weren't real arguments coming from the right. So I love it when they say, you know, it was Scarborough. He was referring to, I can't remember exactly what he was talking about, but he called the right a cult. And it's just like, it's fascinating to me. There's an argument over Trump versus DeSantis, who would be the best person to lead in 2024. But on the left, they're willing to vote for Joe Biden en masse, even though they know it's going to destroy everything, and they completely ignore breaking news facts. And they're wrong on every story. I mean, just go down the list. I think Donald, someone tweeted, I should pull up the Instagram image. Somebody was pointing out every major story, Russiagate hoax, Covington, yeah. Jussie Smollett, Kyle Rittenhouse. Add two more to the mix. The January 6th story, we got an acquittal. Yeah. It's not trespassing. The cops let him in. Oh, get ready for this wave of narrative implosion. Now the Whitmer story, two people not guilty and mistrials. The whole thing, Hunter Biden laptop. Yep. I'm sorry, man. When they just believe things that are repeatedly debunked, they're a cult.
I completely agree. Yeah, I can tell. And this looks very much like a religion to me. I was raised in a religious environment. And while I don't think that that was in any way a cult, you can definitely see some of the overtones. You have your priests, you have your acolytes, you have unforgivable sins, you have original sin, sorry, which is obviously in our instance would be like being white, being male, all of this other stuff that you can't change. And I would say definitely this extends to women as well, because if you are not fully feminist, you are a sinner, you're cast out. And if you're like Candace Owens, you're cast out as well. It doesn't matter what shade you are. The only thing that matters is connection to this ideology and complete unquestioning devotion.
I've got a definition of cult. This is from Wikipedia. Social group with socially deviant or novel religious, philosophical, or spiritual beliefs and practices. So deviant or novel, meaning new. So the word cult can be doesn't have to be negative. It's a new idea. It can be a new philosophy that a bunch of people are rallied around.
Colloquially, it refers to a group of people who will not have their minds changed by facts and adhere to a group structure regardless of reality.
Well, I don't think this is a particularly weird thing. I think this is actually very normal, right? Like, your vast majority of societies throughout history have been mediated by some kind of value structure, right? You have to have a coherent cultural understanding of, like, who you are as a people and what your values are. And so you have to have something by which not only people judge their lives and the value of their lives, but also the ways in which they defeat their enemies and climb in social standing. So this stuff, your devotion to this stuff is, yes, it is a way to find meaning, but it's also a way to obtain social status, which is why it's so important to signal your constant agreement with the current thing, right? Because if you're not that person, the person next to you is, and they're going to climb above you. So I think it has a lot of different functions, and I don't think it's anything particularly unique throughout history. We're just seeing it because it doesn't have an explicitly religious nature, because it doesn't have an explicit holy book or someone at the top who's the Pope. We don't treat it that same way, but it has pretty much the same function.
I want to show you guys, I think, one of the most infuriating but greatest examples of the failures of the modern media and the left, and it's this clip that myth-informed Milwaukee guys posted. They said, this is from a couple days ago, Dennis Prager is mocked on Bill Maher when he describes the now mainstream leftist belief that men can menstruate. This is from November 2019. Queer theory and critical race theory ideology are so radical and incoherent, one risks looking crazy pointing them out. I want to play this. Let me get the audio fixed. I always do that. I always have the audio set to the wrong setting. But let me get this audio properly and then...
Wing lie.
We're talking about degrees.
To say that men can menstruate is a lie. And that is now, that is what is said.
Wait, where did that...
You never heard it, right? Okay. Check it out, folks. Check it out. Anyone who says a man cannot menstruate is considered transphobic.
I missed this whole story.
You did.
I did.
Tell me where you're getting this. Just Google it. Can men menstruate?
Who is saying this?
You're talking about a very small percent of people who are actually powerful mainstream corporate sources like the Daily Beast that said July 12th, 2017, yes, men can have periods and we need to talk about them. I know this is an old story, but it's coming up now with all of the parental rights and education bills. And the fact that this narrative has become so prominent, this article was originally published September 21st, 2016, 3 years after a major corporate publication that was once part, I believe, of Newsweek, published this ridiculous story. Bill Maher, 3 years later, still didn't get the memo. His audience laughs. These people do not listen to politics. They have no idea what's going on in this country. They don't read the news, but they all think they're smarter than you, that they all bust out laughing. It is just like the story. I think it was Kierkegaard. The clown comes on stage and he says, there's a fire backstage. Everyone run. And the whole audience bursts up laughing, thinking it's a joke. And so it becomes even more frantic and they laugh even harder. And he said, I think that's how the world will end. Yeah. Seeing this, the reason why I want to highlight this is because if back then people like Bill Maher or Jon Stewart, who had been on hiatus, I suppose, had actually paid attention, like people like Dennis Prager were, maybe they wouldn't be dealing with the insanity they're dealing with now, with the Democrats fleeing the Democratic Party 4-1 in Pennsylvania, the generic congressional ballot being almost 4 points up for Republicans. And the rest of us wouldn't have to, well, you know, I'll just put it this way. They've done it to themselves. You reap what you sow. At this point, where I am is, there are two distinct moral universes, and theirs has nothing to do with me, because this is a perfect example of when they gave up. Mm-hmm. Bill Maher, here's what I tweet, has become lazy and it's sad. Jon Stewart as well. Mm. It's crazy to me that they don't do cursory research on topics anymore. Jon Stewart, just absolutely pathetic. Not a single Google search, huh? You can't do that?
Yeah, no, this is something that we see very often. I remember back when I first started making cartoons on the internet in 2016, and when I was sort of in a sphere of people who were criticizing the left and the far left, the criticism we often received is that we were just talking about a small niche of leftists who basically only existed on college campuses and were completely out of their minds, but these weren't ideas that it really made much sense to critique because they were never going to enter the mainstream, and we were more or less wasting our time. Now, that's obviously been proven to be completely false. These very niche, bizarre ideas end up becoming mainstream very quickly, and part of the reason for that is because the left always needs to find a new cause. It's not as if they move the social dial and go, all right, we're done, we're satisfied, we've achieved equality, now we're going to let you know, we're going to rest and have society exist as it is. They constantly need to push for more and more and more.
Yeah, I think that also the poisoning of our food supply and water supply with like microplastics and birth control that is being peed into the sewer systems, like, is causing people to go towards this transgender state of being. And so it's that also is adding on to the rhetoric.
I think that's a myth. I think that's greatly over-exaggerated.
I want to see more research.
Because we did talk about it. We did talk about it. I think social manipulation, ideological manipulation, I think the fact that you have some people who are the epitome of follower and they'll just go along with whatever. I mean, how many people watched that episode of Bill Maher and laughed along with him, thinking he was the smart one in the room when he was just dead wrong? And they follow along with that for years. And now these stories that were published in the corporate press 6-7 years ago are now in the forefront in our schools. Now these are the parents, these liberal parents in Loudoun County who are now freaking out and voting Republican, these suburban moms who are starting to wake up and freak out because they watch shows like that. Mm-hmm. So I think indoctrination, manipulation, but pure laziness from bad leaders.
I'll say, in a little bit of defense of Bill Maher, I have a lot of criticism of Bill Maher, but he, Prager came at him and kind of blindsided him with that data, and neither of them knew, could back it up. Like, Bill asked him, where'd you get that data? Who said that? And Dennis didn't have an answer. He didn't say the Daily Beast. He should have quoted the article if he's going to bring it up.
I suppose the issue I had was, with Dennis is that he was heated when he said it. If he presented it in a more calm demeanor, it wouldn't have elicited the same response.
Well, sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you.
No, I was just going to say, but yeah, I did a tweet on this, and it's very clear that this pattern, right? We see this all the time. It starts with, oh no, this isn't happening. It's not a real thing. And then it goes to, well, maybe it's here and there. It's a few crazies. And then by the end of it, oh, well, it's good actually, right? And this is the most predictable thing you can imagine. 3 years ago, this was a right-wing conspiracy. Now it's something that every major corporation, every major educational institution, and now even the government is saying. This is the most predictable thing in the world. And the amazing thing about this is that Bill Maher, this will not change his priors at all. Mm. He will not think for a moment I was wrong. He did this interview with, I think it was Ben Shapiro recently. And he said, you know, it's not me. You know, I didn't change. The left changed. Yeah. It never occurs to him for a moment that there is a reason that people keep getting left behind by the left. There is a reason that this keeps occurring. It's a pattern. It's predictable.
I've had people ask me to, you know, reach out, or people who are connected, you know, saying like, would you want to get in touch with the people at Bill Maher? And I don't want to say too much about it because it's not going to happen. And I wonder if I should try and extend an olive branch in some capacity to talk to the guy, because he has said some good things about how woke the left has become. But I'd be directly critical of so much. You know, there was the Ben Shapiro, Malcolm Nance conversation.
Yeah.
And that was fantastic. And Ben is correct. I don't care about your opinions on policy. I care about if you're talking about facts. And when a conservative comes out and says, here's a thing that is true and here's evidence, I say, okay, that's true. Then they say, here's my opinion on the policy. I say, well, that we can discuss. Mm-hmm. What's happening now is a conservative like Ben Shapiro goes on Real Time with Bill Maher and says, here are the facts. And they go, oh, whoa, 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 whoa. And it's like, if you haven't done the research, Bill, how are you hosting this show? So Ian, I accept your point, especially about Dennis Prager being unable to say, here's where it's happening. I think the issue for Dennis was it was 3 years beyond the point of this conversation beginning. So the answer was actually every major corporate website, corporate news website, has stated this in some form or another.
He pulled an Ian Crossland. Dennis Prager did. He did a derailed the conversation and then didn't know what he was talking about. Couldn't back it up, and everyone thought he was an idiot. But he was right.
But here's what we do, and this is why I'm going to say it right now. Look, I think Bill Maher's show is just it's just archaic. It's obsolete.
Yeah, the format
on this show. If someone comes on the show and says it's a lie to say that, you know, men can menstruate, you know what we do?
Pull it up.
We all have laptops.
That's right.
And yeah. and the desktop terminal, like let's search in real time. It's remarkable to me that Bill Maher still exists in this vacuum.
The show's called Real Time.
It's called Real Time. Real Time. Right. Yeah. Can't take his phone. Dennis couldn't pull out his phone and be like, "There you go.
Here." Let's search in real time, Bill.
Do you guys even read the news?
Seriously.
And you know what I would have said? When they all started laughing, I'd take my phone up, I'd pull it up, and I'd say, there it is, guys, 2016, the Daily Beast. Want me to get another article? You mean to tell me I'm the only one on this panel who actually reads the news? Then why do any of you think you should have an opinion on news?
Yeah, and also, not to Monday morning quarterback Prager here too much, but I would have asked, or I like to think I would have asked, why is that wrong? Why is what I'm saying incorrect? Do you not believe that men can become women?
Right.
Because this was a mainstream view on the left, and if that's the case, then why isn't it the case that men can menstruate?
When Dennis Prager goes on to say that college dorms for males have tampons, Bill Maher says, that's for their girlfriends.
What?
Talk about, you take a guy like Bill Maher. You know what I think? I think he retired. I think we see a lot of this. I think Bill Maher retired in his mind.
Yeah, mentally, yeah.
Yeah, like he's like, look, I've been doing this for decades. Yeah. I'm so exhausted. There's other things I want to do. I'm not going to read the news all day. Just give me the copy. I'll read it and we'll talk about
Politically incorrect was badass. And then he got, after 9/11, it was like some government clampdown. They were like, he's saying too much. Shut him down. And they shut his show down. And I think he changed after that. He was like, whoa, I got to self-censor now. Or I'm going to not make it in this industry.
Well, they put him on HBO and the idea was that he didn't have to worry about it. And I used to watch this all the time. I used to watch Daily Show all the time. And I will point this out every time. Jon Stewart praised Project Veritas on more than one occasion.
Yeah, it's great. Mm.
Now he's just woke, yelling at Andrew Sullivan. And it's just all of this stuff is the lowest of lowbrow garbage. The reason I bring it up here is just because Dennis Prager was correct on this. Prager, you has been leading the charge. Granted, conservative ideology, I don't care. They're correct when they say the left has made the argument. Now they give their counter argument. You can agree with them or disagree with them, but their premise is correct. Mm-hmm. And people like Bill Maher, people like Jon Stewart, people like Stephen Colbert have abandoned what they once were supposedly representing, which was reality.
Yeah.
Like Colbert said, right? Reality has a liberal bias.
Mm.
Now it's fictional cult world has a liberal bias. And the rest of us are confused as to what these people are reading when they read anything, if they read anything.
And that's a really important point. One thing you mentioned earlier is the fact that societies and cultures have always had authority structures and they've always had rules that people are expected to follow. But part of what's so bizarre about this is you basically have rules which are wildly unpopular and historically unprecedented that the left is forcing on everyone else. And it is even most people on the left. It's a very small percentage of extremely online individuals who will complain to corporations and make them feel as if they need to censor themselves and change their corporate structuring and way of advertising. Why? What's wrong?
Because it's around 10% of the population.
Well, it's increasing. It is absolutely increasing. And I think the idea is spread, but chances are when you encounter someone who says a man can become a woman, they don't genuinely believe that. I'm not saying that absolves them from saying it. It's actually an even bigger problem because they are being dishonest. But most people recognize this stuff as ridiculous. The question is, how do we make them feel comfortable saying that?
When I was talking to a friend of mine on Facebook, I've told the story before, and she all of a sudden started adopting the gender ideology stance. She told me, you know, the whole, she was like, trans women are women, trans men are men. And I said, okay, I don't care if that's your premise. My question to you then is, I asked her, you would be physically attracted to someone who's biologically female, like a person with a vagina, but who is like, you know, got a beard. And she was like, I could learn how to do that.
Mm.
And I was like, that sounds like conversion therapy to me. And she just blocked me.
Yeah.
Because it's because there is, I feel like a lot of these people are not strong moral leaders. Mm-hmm. Not everybody is. I feel like many of these people just want to be followers because it's simpler. And the logic of their brains is conflicted with the survival aspect of their brain.
Exactly.
To fit in with society, I must just say this.
Yeah, adaption.
Exactly. Well, and that's extremely insidious because ultimately you either live what you believe or believe what you live, as they say. Mm-hmm. And if you stay silent about the truth for long enough, you do start to believe the lie. So I'm not saying that we're not at risk of people buying into this. We very clearly are. And my view is the exact opposite. We are in danger. But oftentimes conservatives are trying to convince people on these issues when what we need to be doing is help people understand that the thing that they already actually secretly believe is not something that they should be embarrassed or afraid to say.
But here's the thing, and you got to remember this. societies are run by organized minorities every time. So saying that it's not everybody on the left, of course it's not.
Yeah.
That's not what matters. Right. What matters is who on the left believes it and where they sit in positions of power. There's a reason everyone is adopting this stuff. It's not because they necessarily believe it right away, but eventually they do believe it. I think they do eventually genuinely take it on board because they understand this received morality is advantageous in our society. They know that. And so that's why people will do, like Tim was talking about, they will go out and they will alter their belief system because the people who are important are telling them what is going to come next, what is going to be signaled as positive, what is going to increase their standing, and what's going to make it easier for them to get along with what's actually going to be moral. And so saying, oh, just a few people believe it or it's a small minority, if it's the right minority, that's the most dangerous thing possible.
I wouldn't disagree with any of that, but what I would reaffirm is my point that what we have to do in order to combat that is have people speak their minds and speak the truth, because it's only going to be powerful if we acquiesce to it.
I got this quote here, Darwin. It's not the strongest of the species that survives, nor the most intelligent. Is that how it goes? But it's the one that is most adaptable to change. Mm. Terrifying, but true.
Well, have you guys ever seen Idiocracy?
Yep.
Mm. Mike Judge, man, talk about brilliant. I love the point made in the beginning. Eventually, evolution wasn't rewarding the strongest or the smartest. It was rewarding those who simply reproduced the most.
Yeah.
As a species, we have created this sphere of safety where we're untouched from war in the United States for the most part in the past, 200 years or 150 years or so. Civil War obviously was bad. We do have crime, but relative to the rest of the world, we have fat homeless people. I mean, it's a serious problem in this country. And though we do have poverty, we are extremely wealthy, extremely well-fed, extremely safe. And so this has created that environment that Mike Judge was sort of talking about. Evolution simply rewarding those who reproduce the most.
But in this case, it's ideological reproduction.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's just the ideas that become the most popular that end up governing your society. Now, I'm very optimistic in some sense. I believe that ultimately, in the final analysis, the truth wins, but your society has no guarantee of existing forever.
In a more like Darwinist previous iteration of our civilization, less technologically advanced, the strongest and the smartest would survive by nature of their ideology. Working together, having strong families, having strong communities, being armed. Now everything's so safe. The ideology that's becoming more powerful and dominant is deconstructivist, is reductivist. It's a blank slate. It is.
Yeah.
It's deconstruction.
Yes.
It's breaking everything apart. Now, that can exist because we're in such a magnificent bubble of wealth and security until they destroy it by deconstructing it. And then it's going to be just pure chaos, man. Like, you know, the food shortages that are coming.
Yes.
The product of electing someone like Joe Biden out of sheer ignorance, resulting in the chaos that we've had over the past year.
I am developing the probably highly unpopular opinion, and you're welcome to pitch in on this if you think along the same lines, that we desperately need some form of hardship to make us realize that our imagined difficulties are just that. They're completely imaginary. We have much bigger things to worry about. We've just never had to worry or even think about our survival. We don't know where our food comes from. That's a huge problem. We're about to learn. That's troubling. I think it's what we need.
That's the amazing thing, too. Like, I visited farms. And growing up in the city, it really was a aha moment when I saw actual production.
Right.
Because, I mean, Illinois's got farms, you know? But people don't even connect the dots of the wheat fields get, you know, harvested and then sent to processing. And then it makes its way to a factory and then gets turned into food. The first time I watched how it's made, and they were like, cupcakes, how they're made. And it shows, like, a guy pouring a massive bag of flour into this giant vat. And I'm just like, wow. And then the machine, like, cranking out the cupcakes and sealing the bags. How it's made, it is an amazing show. How it's made is an amazing show. Because people don't recognize supply chain. You go to the store, boom, cupcakes. In a wrapper, you got no idea how they got there.
It grew there.
Yep. Just blink, there it is.
It's so interesting, if you went to the store and on every piece of food you were going to buy, there was a little video under it that was showing you the entire manufacturing process of the piece. Sorry to interrupt you, though.
Oh, no problem. No, so Machiavelli talked about rule of foxes and rule of lions, right? And your foxes are your very clever, quick-witted. They're going to be kind of your liberals. They're going to be the people who are good at combining and coming up with new ideas. And then your lions are going to be kind of your more conservative, patriotic, martial-type people. And he said, at the beginning, your civilizations are always run by lions because they have to secure safety. You have to make sure you're getting food supply, those kind of things. But over time, as your society gets more complex, you start to see the rise of the foxes because they're able to address these new things, these new problems that are coming up. They're able to make these new combinations and synthesize things. But as your society gets more decadent, as you get further away from the problems that the lions solve, you forget why you had lions in the first place. Mm-hmm. And your foxes become the dominant ruling class. And we are so far around the bend, we are all foxes, right? Everyone in charge right now is a college grad. They've never been in the military. They've never farmed. They don't know anything about this stuff. Food shows up at their table. Truck drivers bring it to them. They never give it a second thought. Of course, the world's safe. We're America. We can conquer anything. And so they don't think about what happens when you can no longer just work your way out of this by being clever. What happens when the rubber meets the road?
And you know what lions do? Lions sleep. They sleep most of the day.
Mm-hmm.
Lionesses, I guess, will go out and actually do work. But the male lions just sleep. And it kind of feels like that's what it is. The foxes have started conniving, started scheming and taking things. While the lion looks around and he's like, hey, Simba. All that the sun touches is ours.
Yeah.
I'm going to bed.
Yep.
And then the foxes run in and just start controlling everything, and the lions don't pay attention.
They sleep to conserve their energy for the hunt or something?
No, they just sleep. The lionesses do the hunting.
Yeah.
Yeah, the dudes basically get up, eat, bang, and go to sleep.
So Kamala Harris, she's the lioness in this equation?
I don't know. She's probably the hyena.
I think this is a good metaphor. Hyena, dude.
You hear that laugh? Yeah, if we're doing Lion King, she's definitely a hyena.
Yeah.
Is it too far gone?
I think the system's going to have to go through some serious hard times and probably a little bit of collapse before people realize the issue. Mm-hmm. I think that we've been trained to believe that experts are the key, right? You got to have an expert for everything. You need to have a person who has a particular degree and has enough doctorates, enough credentials, and they're the ones that solve everything. Everything is solvable through like this kind of managerial scientific system. But it's not. And at the end of the day, there are certain things that have to be done physically in the real world. It's not just always ideas that solve these problems. And I think until people taste some of the difficulty that comes from a society that's entirely based on kind of fox governors, they're never going to realize the problem.
Perhaps. But it's also possible that we can succeed in all of this by doing literally nothing. Why? Well, as I mentioned, they are tearing everything down, and the strong are the ones who are going to figure things out and survive. The left likes to make fun of the fact that we promote emergency food, but in the event you actually need it, it's not even going to be us that's laughing. It's going to be the preppers in the mountains with the 30 years worth of beans calling us amateurs. But they can live in their cities with no food supply, no understanding of it, as everything falls apart. But maybe we just have to do very little but remain resilient. We have this story from Daily Mail breaking. Discovery completes its merger with Warner Media and acquires the rights for CNN, HBO, and Warner Bros. Content as staff fear bloodbath of layoffs. Well, all right. Yeah, let's. Should we get the cake now or should we wait until they start laying people off?
Because
CNN Plus also, guys, can I just make an announcement here? So CNN Plus launched on day one. They cut their price subscription in half.
Yep.
A day later, there was reporting that CNN was expecting layoffs because the signups were so abysmal. Now, I don't know how many signups they got. I don't know how much money they made. I assume it was bad. I just want to say, in 1 month, Chicken City has 21,000 subscribers. And today we had 6 chicken parties. We are on track for year one of Chicken City to make $100,000+.
Those are golden chickens.
And as I stated, a man who watches Chicken City is more informed and better informed than a man who watches CNN.
Correct.
Now, I'm half kidding. Like, it is funny to mention that our chicken live stream is doing so well. There's a real value to it, and that people like putting their pets in front of it. People like super chatting. And they use Chicken City as a chat room, basically, throughout the day to talk about a lot of ideas from this show, even. But I ultimately just want to get to the point where CNN is crumbling. These networks are failing. Their ratings are in the gutter. Our ratings are improving every day. Look at the Daily Wire. These guys are making over $100 million per year now. It's an explosion. And we're looking at sentiment. When the left, these activists try saying things like the right is, the Republican is minority rule. It's just, you know what? moderate voters side with Republicans on most issues 2-1 right now. You look at all of the data. You look at Black Lives Matter. You look at the Democrats. You look at the economy. You look at inflation. You look at gas. It's all like 60% independents are, you know, on the same side as Republicans. And they think they're the majority.
Yeah.
They're spiraling out of control. Their companies are crumbling. And we only need keep steering our ship, focusing on building and developing cultural content, media content, websites, and I think we're going to be all, I think we'll be all right.
No, I think you're absolutely correct. I've brought this stat up on the show before, but more Americans would rather we look into the 2020 BLM riots and investigate those than support the January 6th commission.
It's because a bunch of buildings got destroyed in that thing.
Yeah.
How about that? How about
got killed? A lot of people got killed.
How about when the Republicans take something? Over in November, we launch the BLM committee? The BLM Investigatory Committee.
Yes. They should.
I'm open, man, but I am so done with the witch hunts. I do not think that is the way forward.
Wrong.
You think
wrong.
We got to weed
then
them out?
Then they're going to cast a spell on you, Ian.
Wrong.
Yeah. Must we burn the witches, Seamus?
Wrong, Ian. When they come out and levy a whole bunch of fake investigations and put Kyle Rittenhouse through the ringer for 2 years, basically,
solitary
or a year.
Confinement.
Solitary. When they put the J6 defendants through the solitary confinement, effectively torturing them, and now we're saying, oh, what's that, acquittals?
Suicide,
look,
yeah.
Some people rioted. They're going to go to jail for that. That I understand, and they should. Many of these people were bumbling around confused, and they lock them up for how long? They raided a woman, I think it was in Alaska, she was the wrong person. So then, all of a sudden, the Republicans take over, and Ian, people like you say, it's time to end the witch hunts. And the Democrats go, good, good, good. Because when you ask for freedom, when I ask for freedom, you give it to me because it's according to your principles, but what's the saying actually? It's like when
Dune.
Frank Herbert, yeah.
Yeah, what's the quote?
When you were strong, I asked for freedom because it was according to your principles. Now that I am strong,
I deny it to you.
Deny it to you because that's according to my principles.
And so the problem with the liberty-minded individuals, civil libertarians, conservatives, is they keep doing this and they've kept doing this. Joe Biden should be impeached day one.
Yep.
For his illicit dealings in Ukraine. But I am willing to bet Republicans are, like Mitch McConnell is going to step up and say, no, we don't want to do that.
What would Jesus do?
What did he say about buying a sword?
Oh, yeah. He who does not have a sword, sell his cloak and buy one.
Yeah. So
I think it'd be fair to say that you're supposed to protect yourself from people who would wrong you and try and destroy you, right?
Jesus went into the temple and he flipped tables because those money changers were cheating people.
I think the Bible wrote him to be way more passive than he actually was because he did toss tables around in a temple.
So,
like,
but
but
everything you know about him is from the Bible and what's written there. So,
I don't want to make this a religious discussion.
Yeah.
Okay,
but
the point is,
I'm trying to think of the
it's political.
You know, the
you can't be like, now that I have power, I will let all of you be free after your illegal dealings, your manipulations, your scams and your criminal behavior. You're all forgiven.
One problem with
then the moment they get elected, they come and they lock you up.
If you did like a tribunal that was like an independent tribunal that wasn't a governmental thing, it was, I don't know how you could actually do an independent thing this day and age, but you got to make sure that it's not left to its own devices because it will just continue to do what it does, which is root people out. So you got to watch out for like McCarthyism all over again.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I think just because you can point, and this is sort of the problem with the witch hunt analogy, just because you can point to examples in the past that you feel were a group of people being overzeal in their attempt to clean their society up, that doesn't mean that bad people shouldn't be held accountable when they do bad things and that we shouldn't have trials to figure out who's destroying our culture or society. Yeah.
The problem is that the right thinks it's having a discussion and the left knows it's fighting a war.
Mm-hmm.
They know this is the ratchet. The right thinks that they're adhering to a set of principles. They think that they're the ones going by the Constitution, playing fair. We want to be objective. We want to follow the rules. The left knows they're fighting for control of the culture. Politics is about rewarding your friends and punishing your enemies. And we can all sit around and pretend like we've moved beyond that and we're better people than that. At the end of the day, that's what works. That's what maintains power, and that's how you win, and that's how you make things better if you're the ones who are going to make things better. And we don't like that because it feels icky, it feels restrictive, but it's true. And we can cry about it all we want, or we can realize the truth that's been in front of us for many, many years, and what plays out every day, we see it all the time.
And it's not even as if we're just going, these people are our enemies and we only want to punish them because we disagree with them. They were burning down buildings. People got killed. They destroyed businesses. People were terrified. It's incredible how quickly people forgot what the summer of 2020 was.
Yeah, and one of the things that I noticed actually today was that you need to strive to be the better person in your personal life. But when it comes to politics, you have to be pragmatic because the conservatives have attempted to apply political political or personal dynamics to politics. They want to be friendly. They want to be the better person. They don't want to do to Ketanji Brown Jackson what they did to Brett Kavanaugh. But they are losing, and that's why the groomers is working.
And but look at the media narrative on Ketanji Brown Jackson. The president gets up and says, can you believe what those Republicans did? And all these Democrats are like, they besmirched her good name. Yeah. It's like, you accused Brett Kavanaugh of being party to gang rape.
Well, yeah, exactly. And this is the difference. So whenever
and they asked her about her
actual record. Right. Yes. And so that's my exact point. People will compare the right and the left. And anytime the right actually shows its teeth or tries to do anything effective, people go, oh, they're just as bad as the left, ignoring the fact that we are using actual facts and events that happened to talk about this person's record and not smearing someone without any evidence, which is what they did to Kavanaugh. And to the point about groomers, it's not as if that's the wrong terminology to refer to the people who are opposing this bill once they know it's about preventing adults from having secret conversations about sex with children that they tell them not to repeat to their parents.
I think
so. It's not like the right is going out there saying we're going to use these, you know, illicit or dirty techniques to go after the left the way they do to us. It's the right is saying let's be reasonable and hold people accountable for doing bad things. And then the response from we conservatives is that makes us just as bad as them.
Mm-hmm. We need to excise.
This is what
we need to start building our own systems. Gaining control of platforms that we like. Elon Musk buying Twitter, brilliant. Mm-hmm. Daily Wire launching their own children's content, movies and streaming platform kind of stuff, brilliant. When you're on the playground at recess, and the bully kids or whatever are demanding that you say or believe something you don't believe, otherwise you're not cool. Be like, I'm gonna go over on this side of the playground. I'm gonna make my own game, and you guys can't play. And then do something cool and fun and convince people to join you instead of engaging with people who are cheating the whole time. I always tell people this. We're all playing a game of Monopoly. They're overtly cheating every time. And then we just sit there and for the longest time, the right, and I think now what's helping the right is the post-liberals joining the fray, giving them a larger amount of forces in the culture war. But for the longest time, we're just like, I know they're cheating, but if I just play harder, I'll win.
And it's not even that. It's not even like they're cheating and the right is saying, well, we want to follow the rules. It's like they're cheating and then they land on Boardwalk, which we own, and there's hotels on it. And we go, it would be too mean to make them pay the amount that the game says that they should.
Yeah, you owe me $1,000, but that would bankrupt you. So you can just pass.
We're going to be really nice to
you. Can you imagine
guys.
If you played Monopoly like that? Yeah. I think technically you don't have to take rent if they land on your property. I'm not sure about that, though.
Well, you don't because you're allowed to do free trade.
I kind of see this metaphor as if there's a brain worm infested in the American mind, and the left arm is flailing around, smacking itself, and the right arm's like, whoa, that arm's out of control. Cutting off the arm is not it might work, but it's not the solution. It's just like a Band-Aid, you know?
Dude, haven't you seen Idle Hands with Seth Green?
No.
The solution was to lop the hand off, man. His hand got possessed by the devil or whatever.
Tales from the Crypt. Yeah, doesn't feel right, though, to like go after the people when it's this like weird banking mentality thing that seized control of the government.
When you go on a dangerous hike through cold weather and your left hand is frostbitten and rotted, and then when you go back into the warmth and it starts thawing, the dead particles can toxify your system.
Oh, snap.
You've got to cut it off.
Yeah, you do.
You've got to remove it.
Has it gone necrotic?
I would say yes, dude. Ugh. Look at what's going on right now. You know, I just tweeted, would progressive parents give their minor sons breast implants if they were trans? Because breast implants are temporary, can be removed, but mastectomies are permanent because they are giving minor girls mastectomies. And that's a shocking question, I suppose. When we get to the point where we're talking about to what degree are we willing to provide surgeries to children to make them feel better, like the systems and you know what? Who was it who said that cultures that are obsessed with gender are on the verge of collapsing like that? Have you heard that? Because we've seen it in many different civilizations. Hmm. The obsession over gender completely ignores the realities of every other mental, dysmorphic issue. Like, the only one that matters to the left and to the mainstream media is gender, even though there's many other body dysmorphia issues like weight, like anorexia, or what is it, like general body dysmorphic disorder where you want to like cut your hands off and stuff like that?
Yeah, yeah. Transableism. I think that's something that's what that's called when you feel like you're in the wrong body, so you cut a piece off and then...
It's called like general dysmorphic disorder.
It was Jordan Peterson that has been talking about this. He was on Rogan talking about it, episode 1769.
It was me on Rogan in 2018 talking about it.
Technically, it goes back to Aristotle when he first...
No, but this is exactly what I said to Dorsey. I was like, are you going to create protections for people who want to remove their hands or ears or nose or something?
I think
that's
no.
ridiculous.
That's too far to me, man. When you start surgically cutting yourself off, like, that's too much.
They're
Come
doing
on.
It already.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Girls
so much.
Under the age of 18 are already getting permanent top surgery to their chests. Now, I suppose it's up to the parents or whatever, but I kind of feel like when you're an adult and you're, mm-hmm. you know, we've crossed a certain threshold where we're like, that's where you're old enough. You make decisions for your life to mm-hmm. do body modification. When we're at the point where there was a study I tweeted about earlier, 13 to 25 year olds, females were surveyed on, half of them got mastectomies, half of them didn't. The median age for the mastectomy was 19, but it was overwhelmingly 14 and 15 year olds.
That's child abuse.
Who were having their breasts removed. Now, the reason I ask this is you can give a male breast implants and that's temporary. Meaning, at some point, if something happens, they can be removed and all is, you know, relatively back to normal. But for young women, the mastectomies are permanent. I don't want to get into all of that stuff. Actually, we have a story we can talk about in that regard. But I bring this up when you're saying, has it gone necrotic? And I'm like, the point I bring up with that, how is it that that's a question to be asked of the left based on yeah. their own ideology with their children? Should 14-year-old boys get breast implants? I'm asking that because they are already surgically removing the breasts of girls.
Yeah, exactly. So once we've gotten to the point where the left would say that, you know, giving a mastectomy to a minor should be legal and isn't child abuse, you're not dealing with an arm that isn't working. I think it's more akin to a tumor.
And the problem is that when it comes on the internet and other kids see it on TikTok and they're like, oh, I want to be accepted, so I'll do what that guy's doing, cutting himself up. That's when it becomes necrotic. That's when you get blood poisoning and sepsis, is when it's in the system, infecting the system.
I think, you know, typically I say I defer to the doctors of, you know, many of these kids and these families. I genuinely believe that there are issues of depression and dysphoria and all that stuff, and they need to find a way to deal with this. In Scandinavian countries that the left often likes to tout in terms of their medical care, they do psychotherapy, and they do sessions. They don't immediately go for pharmaceuticals or surgery. So if we were to look to the Scandinavian countries, which are bastions of great medical services, you'd see there's less of this, you know, less of these circumstances occurring. And maybe that's the right way to do it. Maybe, you know what, I gotta say, I'm in favor of those socialist Scandinavians, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
They're not really socialist, but you get my point.
No, yeah, I hear you.
They got it going on.
I'm not trying to get into a conversation about trans. I'm trying to point out that there is a fractured logic in what's happening. There's no conversation about body dysmorphia. There's no conversation about people who are cutting their ears, cutting their fingers off and things like that, because those people exist as well. And they're also in very small proportions. There's no conversation about protecting transracial people. In fact, transracial people are shunned and mocked. For instance, people like
Rachel Dolezal.
Yeah. Rachel Dolezal. And is Sean King transracial, or is he just what's
he's
his deal?
Pretending, I think. I don't know.
Well, he says he's biracial, right? I don't know, though, because, like, I don't know
his
story.
His mom slept around, I think, was the issue.
Oh, is that what it was?
Yeah.
Oh, so he actually does, I don't know.
He identifies as biracial, I guess.
I mean, he's whiter than Rachel Dolezal.
Yeah, he's pretty.
He is.
Yeah, he's pretty bad.
So, I don't know, at this point, you know, he's still considered, I guess a lot of people hate him, you know, to be honest.
Yeah. Bipartisanly, people hate him. They think he's
yeah.
on both sides.
But he's still prominent.
Yeah, yeah.
He's still prominent. Ahead. And so if we're at the point now where someone who, at the very least, looks overtly white can give themselves a haircut and put up a sepia-toned photograph and they're considered black, it just feels like there's no cultural cohesion. So, yeah, necrotic. The system is completely broken. Mm. It makes very little sense. And you've got people right now. The article we read the other day where the guy said, why are Republicans so concerned about grooming? And I'm like, okay, yo, we got a problem. Mm-hmm. So I just ignore it. I ignore it.
You can't ignore sepsis, though. That's how people die. Blood poisoning.
Yep. That's right.
That's a good point.
Yeah. That's right. Man.
I think you made a very cogent point that people's adaptability is overriding their intellect and their strength. And that's a natural part, like what Darwin was saying, a natural part of the survival instinct is you adapt. If you have a totalitarian government and you don't adapt, it kills you. So the adaptable survive.
But why, you know, this is the thing, you know, when I was talking to this friend of mine, this was like several years ago, because we're not friends anymore. She deleted her Facebook. She blocked me.
Wow.
She blocked me and then deleted her Facebook. And I think it was because what I pointed out. That the logic of her mind, what she knew to be true, was conflicted with what she had to say in order to survive. But I'm like, why say it to me? You know, like I was having a candid conversation where I wasn't telling her to believe anything. I was asking her questions about what she believed. I had another friend who was talking to me on Facebook, and I sent them UN statistics on the refugee crisis. And I think what I said was, what we're seeing with I think it's the central Mediterranean route for refugees was predominantly economic migrants from places like Nigeria. And the eastern route was refugees from Syria and Afghanistan. And she got really angry and blocked me. And I'm like, what? Yo, I'm not messaging my friends and being like, you're so dumb. I was like, hey, how's it going? How you been? And then they're talking like, I'm just really upset about what's going on with the refugee stuff and these crises. And I'm like, yeah, man, I hear you. It's brutal stuff. And then they'd say something like, all of these people are just fleeing war and I can't understand why we can't help them. And then I said, well, I mean, the news we're actually seeing about Italy is actually the central route here. Here's an article from the UN. And they were like, F you, bam.
That sounds like a 6-year relationship I was in. I try and bring up logic and she'd be like, yeah, you don't understand me. And I'm like, okay, logic isn't the way to communicate with everyone. Sometimes you need emotion and to listen.
Yeah, but when someone says I'm mad about something that isn't happening, and then I'm like, oh well, you know, here's what the UN is saying, yeah. And then they freak out even more.
The system I would have, she'd be like, I'm in pain, I'm having a hard time. They'd be like, well, you know, if you did this, it would make you. And she'd be like, I just want you to tell me it's gonna be okay, you know. And it's like, that's logic. It's just the other half.
Men
of communication.
Men are from Mars, women are from Venus.
Hello.
If there's a lesson we should learn from all this, it's that the marketplace of ideas is a fiction. It's not a real thing. It's not how societies change their minds. It's not how individuals change their mind. Yes, of course, we all have rational conversations, and there are situations where you can bring facts to people, and if they're open to you, they're going to go ahead and change mind, but they have to be pretty close to you already, right? You rarely get to a situation where someone is on the entirely different spectrum, or you don't have a large amount of trust built up with them, and you just drop the facts on them, and they say, oh, okay, you're right. I'll just go ahead and concede this thing that totally alters and shatters my worldview because you happen to bring me facts. That's not how people work, unfortunately. It's about making sure to understand how these things get communicated, how this information gets manipulated, and until people have a better understanding of how that happens and people on the right and the post-left are willing to understand that and utilize that, I think they're going to continue to just kind of fall on their face trying to have these circular arguments that never go anywhere.
I have a solution. Oh. Elon, the market cap of Twitter, I believe, is around, what, $50 billion? You have access to that level of capital. Now you're going to have to sell a decent amount of Tesla. That could be dangerous for you, I understand, but you're rich. Buy 100% of Twitter and then shut it down completely.
Snap.
Now, first of all, I'm joking, right? But I'm only half joking. The problem we're facing is that Twitter keeps people in the cult. To get someone out of a cult, you have to remove them from the cult. Expose them to a diversity of worldviews and opinions, so they can see that this one cult worldview isn't correct. But what happens? When you go to someone and say, you know, X plus Y equals Z, as like a fact statement, like here's Hunter Biden was doing illicit dealings in Ukraine, and based on the evidence of him sharing a bank account with his dad, it seems likely that Joe Biden was involved in illicit dealings. Joe Biden got the prosecutor fired. We know all these stories. Give them that information. The problem is they open their phone right back up, and they get sucked right back into the cult. Patting them on the back, hugging them, telling them, no, they're the cult. We're the right ones. Mm. We're the ones who are telling you the truth. Like Brian Stelter. Do you guys see that high school kid? I think it was a high school kid, right?
It's college freshman.
College freshman.
Yeah.
He asks Brian, like, here's all the stories that you guys have gotten wrong. Yeah. And Brian goes, when that reporter got seriously injured in Ukraine, we all were there for him. Because that's what real news does.
What?
Talk about, I called him a politician.
Yeah.
He didn't answer the question.
That sounds like something Michael Scott would say.
Right.
Yeah, it does.
It's like
that's
a very office quote.
Because they're a cult. Yeah. Yes. Now, of course, the right has their zealots. But here's the funny thing. That ain't us. Luke ragged on Trump nonstop. Mm-hmm. Ian rags on Trump. But we try to have real conversations about this to the best of our abilities. And they would call us the cult. So when you've got a cult that genuinely believes they're right and they're wired in, how do you get them away from it unless you delete Twitter outright? Now, pondering upon that, imagine how bad it will be in the metaverse when people are just plugged in like the Borg.
Yeah,
there's
in?
No escape.
No, okay. I'm staying away from any kind of hyper-reality as much as possible. No, thank you.
How embedded are you in your device these days?
I mean, I can't pretend. Like,
you're good at Twitter.
Yeah, but I spend some time on Twitter.
That's true.
But just thinking along these lines, what do we do moving forward when Twitter has become the hive cult that people are already plugged in? Whether you get an implant for it or not, people are wired to the net. They're in the matrix already, man. What do you do?
I got to have an unlimited amount of Twitters, basically. It's the only way, with unlimited amounts of terms of service, because you're never going to please everyone.
That's not the issue. The issue is these people are already on Twitter. And when you say, here's the truth, here's the evidence, they go, whoa, I didn't realize that. Then they pick up their phone and retreat back to their safe space. It doesn't matter if it's Twitter or Minds or BitChute. It's people building communal safe spaces for confirmation.
So this is probably the war you were talking about. It's like a constant erosion of thought and regrowth of thought.
I mean, ideally, we would all actually have safer spaces. And I know that's not going to be a popular thing to say, but the reality is that America is not a country that's going to build consensus ever again. And we need to come to that realization. We need to understand that the people who are, you know, in California, you know, going, you know, setting this kind of stuff up for kids, and the people who are in deep red states who are banning it, I think it was Alabama just banned it, they live entirely different lives. They have entirely different value systems. There is no overlap anymore. In a lot of ways, exactly. There never was. We think of America as one cohesive culture, but really until World War II, it wasn't. There wasn't that level of mass communication to build that kind of thing. There wasn't a level of standardized education to bind people together under a certain amount of experiences. Everyone seeing the same movie, everybody listening to the same music. It simply didn't exist. And so I think it's actually really unhealthy for everyone to be linked together across a country where people basically like desperately disagree on all kinds of value-based issues. And we would all be in a much better situation if people could go back to being able to have smaller communities and more regional moralities and be able to deal with their own way. Unfortunately, I don't think that the government's going to let people do that, but I think that would be the better solution.
Here's something to consider too, based on what you're saying. You know, back in the day, our elections tended to be more local,
right?
Because of the way communication happened. Even in the past 20 years, local news outlets, you turn on your Channel 5 news or whatever, and it's your town, your region. You're getting information based on this area. It still to this day exists, but for the most part, it's dying out. Now what ends up happening is someone like Ocasio-Cortez stands up and screams her radicalism and her insane ideas about farting cows. And there's one crazy person in every city who normally has no power, but when they heed the call on the internet, they now focus fire their donations to someone like AOC, who is then able to win in her district and get into federal office. This is taking the radical voices that are normally disparate across the country, unifying them in a digital space, amplifying their power, and then creating serious hyperpolarization in government.
And God forbid, across the world, it's no longer like a national. It's like people in China can donate to AOC, you know, through whatever means they feel like they got to go through.
It's illegal, but they figure out ways to do it. It's insane. People need to understand this, how easy it is for any country to put money into our elections. China can reach out to Seamus and say, would you be willing to animate something for us and we'll pay you $10,000? And Seamus goes, oh, yeah, great. You know, it's just some Chinese company. Then he gets paid 10 grand and then he's got this money. And he goes, I'm going to donate to a politician. Of course, you know, in that circumstance, we're talking about the subversive method of they could hire, like Russia does this, right? Russia was hiring people who had dissident views to work for RT and Sputnik. Someone who was an anti-establishment or dissident voice would be paid, and that alone gave them resources to function in the United States and allow their ideas to flourish more. China can do the same thing. They can find a bunch of social justice activists, put money into nonprofits. The nonprofits will then fund these activists who then help support these politicians. Or if they want to be a bit more direct, they can get an American citizen who does something illegal and just takes a contract with them, knowing they want him to give money to politicians or start super PACs.
And I would imagine corporations could do that as well, could send the money. So it wouldn't have to be like the CCP.
Corporations do it all the time, bro. Yeah. Corporations.
Foreign corporations.
Hundreds of millions of dollars into political action committees and other nonprofits. And they can do all of these things.
Short of like a complete global power outage, I don't see any way to go back.
Like a great reset?
Unfortunately, they'd still have power.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A great reset with no power, that's another conversation.
I don't have the answers, man. I can just see bad stuff happening. And so it's...
I'm so blackpilled lately. Help me.
Well, no. Hold on. We started by talking about how we need only steer the ship. Huh. CNN, all these networks are sinking.
But that's bad. They just got bought. It's a corporate oligarch.
They're laying people off. They're consolidating because they're falling apart, bro.
Well, that might be true.
Yeah.
But it's the one corporation bought three more. Who is it? Who bought who? Discovery bought Warner.
Yep.
They bought Warner.
And merger with Warner.
They merged with Warner, okay.
Just remember how well the Daily Wire and Timcast are doing. Fantastic.
Yeah, yep. You can we're start your own company, too. You can whip it up pretty quick these days.
That's right. We're looking at these companies crumbling. We're looking at Democrat polls collapsing. Republicans in Pennsylvania switching, stealing Democrat voters 4-1. So for every Republican who quits to be a Democrat, Republicans get Democrats 4-1.
I don't know if you guys know, but it's super easy to start a corporation. Like really, really easy. You go to, like, I went to LegalZoom.com and it's like $300. Huh. And you start, now you have your own corporation. It's incredible. It might be a little more than that. I don't know, but. If you have a business, man, you can make it happen.
Yeah, but you don't just need a corporation, you need a business.
You need a bank account.
You need a business to become a corporation.
Yeah, so what I found is don't incorporate until you have income or you're about to start getting income, and then you incorporate because you need to. As opposed to start a corporation and be like, one of these days, I'm going to start using it.
No. If I'm not giving anybody advice, I'll just tell you, in my personal opinion, if you as an individual are doing work, you act as a sole proprietor. Once you get to a certain degree of income, or you want to start hiring, then you can formalize your corporation for those reasons. If you start taking on assets and you want to limit liability, then you create a limited liability corporation for those reasons. So you can separate your assets out from the company and your personal assets. If you're just like a contractor who does odd jobs here and there, you don't necessarily need a corporation, depending on what you do. But a lot of people will create single member LLCs to run their business through to limit liability.
I didn't learn it in public school, which is why I brought it up on the show. I think more people should know about it and be taught that.
Yeah, it was tough for me starting everything up because I had to figure it out on my own. And I had all this different advice and people telling me different things, and we don't do that for our kids. The fascinating thing to me is that a kid is more likely to learn how to bind their chest than how to start a company.
Yikes.
Yeah, has anyone thought about that? A kid is more likely to learn how to tuck his genitals between his legs than he will learn how to open a bank account.
And you mean at public school?
Yeah.
Yeah. Not my kids.
Oh, no.
So we've got this bill in in New Jersey about second graders who have to, you know, learn about identity and all that stuff. And it's like, shouldn't we teach these kids about basic elements of society before we teach them about, you know, inner workings of biology?
Yeah, it's not as if our educational system is doing really well. Our test results are higher and our children are performing well relative to the children in other developed countries. So we can just add all this extra stuff on top of it. I mean,
Pakistani
system's abysmal. But of course, even if our system was doing very well and there was more to add, it wouldn't be this disgusting, perverted nonsense that's going to sexually confuse these kids.
The fascinating thing to me is I remember I used to tell people this stat that in South Africa, a little girl is more likely to be raped than learn how to read.
Huh.
The stats are horrifying. And now to see it in the United States that, you know, a kid is more likely to learn how to bind their, you know, their breasts as opposed to learn how to open a bank account or start a business, like that should be alarming to people.
This is very alarming to me because they asked a bunch of 11-year-old boys what they thought they should be learning in school, and they gave them a very comprehensive list. Here are some of the things. They want to learn about sewing and repairing things, hunting and foraging, money and budgeting, taxes and insurance, healthcare and first aid, cars and mechanics, just to name a few. Kids are not the kind of... They think that kids are like these social justice widgets. I think that's what Ben Shapiro said that the public school system views them as. And they're not. Children are small people that deserve to learn about things like opening bank accounts and starting companies. They do not need to be gender confused by such an early age. And if there was ever anything to fight against, this is it. And we don't have the choice anymore not to fight. There is no option anymore. If you value your children, this is what you have to do.
But I think Jack Posobiec is the one who says it, that fighting back is just having a family.
Right.
Yeah.
He says it all the time.
Have a family.
Yeah.
Work your job. Rebel. Mike Cernovich says, make money.
Yeah.
The medium is the message. Successful. That's it. The way you deliver the message is the message.
Homeschool your kids.
Yes.
I was homeschooled from like pre-kindergarten for as soon as I could communicate in any way. My mom was trying to teach me stuff. We were learning, my brothers and sisters, we learned math when we were like before we were even 5. I was learning how to play chess when I was 3. I tell people, you know, I've talked to people and they say, oh, my 3-year-old couldn't possibly learn that stuff. They're too young.
Right.
And I'm like, it doesn't matter if they can. Start teaching them now. It may be harder for them because they're only 3, but trust me, they are learning. They're not learning as fast as an adult would learn, but they are learning. I hear people say, oh, it's so much easier to learn a language when you're a little kid. And my response is, no, it isn't. How long does it take a human baby to become fluent in English to have a political conversation with you?
Takes a while.
Sorry, it takes like 20 years.
Yeah.
You know, you can have a 12-year-old who can speak English to you, but they're going to be like, I don't know what those concepts mean. I don't know what those things are. But a human being who's 30 years old, on average, I believe it takes around 44 weeks for from someone who speaks a Germanic or Romance language to learn a Germanic or Romance language and be fluent in it enough to actually have political conversations. And it's because all of that element of learning, all of that wisdom and knowledge you've gained throughout your life plays a role in your ability to learn. But also, it's extremely easy to say to someone, you know, basura is garbage. And they instantly connect those because they already understand the concepts of language. Whereas it takes, you know, how long, like, aside from knowledge, getting a kid to actually be able to speak to you is what, 8 or 10 years before they're actually talking and expressing, like, real conversations and asking real questions. So at a younger age, it's actually harder to learn things. But I just say this because don't assume just because your kid is 3, they can't learn. It just will take them longer, but you should be teaching them everything you can. And you, and my opinion on this is always speak to your children like adults.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I always do that. If a kid says something to me like, how do I turn on the game? I'll be like, press the power button and the remote's on top. I'm not going to dumb it down. I'm not going to be like, okay, well, this is the controller. Here's how you use it. I'm going to be like, that's the controller. Pick it up, play it. You'll figure it out. Press the buttons until you figure out what makes them go.
Mm-hmm. They'll ask you when they need you and let them figure it out on their own. I think
exactly.
I remember a conversation that I might be fabricating this, but I seem to remember this conversation with my mom. I was really young watching Sesame Street and they're always talking Spanish on Sesame Street. And I asked my mom, like, can I learn Spanish? And she said, no, it's too hard. And that would basically shut my mind down to it for my entire life until I was in my 20s and 30s and I became sovereign and I knew I could do anything I wanted to do mentally. So if you're a mom out there, don't tell your kid it's too hard. Tell him, yeah, you can. And then learn it with him.
Yeah. I follow a bunch of these Instagrams that are for like raising kids from a young age. And one of the things that a majority of them recommend is just sitting down with your baby and reading to them. And that's so interesting to me because my siblings and I were all homeschooled all of our lives except for like the last 2 years of high school for me and my sister. But my parents read to us and then there came a point where they would take our books away from us to punish us. All of us, we would read under the covers with flashlights. This is how we would get in trouble. We'd get like, you know, spanked for this or whatever. I don't remember how they punished us for this, but we were constantly reading and they thought this was great. All of our vocabularies are incredibly well developed and we're not weird homeschooled kids. People have this fear of homeschooling. They say, well, they're not going to be like other kids. They're not going to be socialized with other kids. My siblings and I were, as you say, we were constantly around adults. And the adults thought that we were incredibly charming because we were well behaved. We knew what adults expected. And we understood that we were going to be adults. So we were working towards that. That was our goal. We didn't just want to stay kids forever. And I think that's a really huge problem with modern people is that they want to stay kids forever. It's become a real issue. And I think homeschooling is going to revolutionize us, hopefully, in the near future.
No, that's very true. And you're correct. A lot of people will say homeschool kids are weird and they don't fit in with the other kids. It's like, well, maybe I don't want them to fit in with the kids who are getting mastectomies when they're 15 years
old.
Yeah,
seriously.
The little soldiers that are being built.
Yeah.
The little machines.
Little foot soldiers.
Yeah, I don't want my kid to feel normal around that environment. That environment was crazy. Public school, I mean. That environment was crazy. I got pushed in the locker. I mean, I think I see kids beating each other, face for like what? Because somebody looked at the other guy wrong.
You got
like,
pushed
what?
In the locker?
Well, yeah, me and my friends. A guy came up and knocked my books out of my hand one time. I was like, dude.
Me and my friends would purposely go in the lockers and hide in them.
Oh, that's not better.
So you wouldn't get beat up. Well, that's the strategy.
That's
next level there.
We didn't really have.
There's an episode of The Simpsons
We didn't
about
have that.
That
problem. Well, so I only went to high school for a couple months, but in grade school and the public school I went to, there wasn't really a big problem. I got into a fight like once, I think.
Yeah, one. I got into one fight.
And it was with a friend of mine.
Yeah, he was a friend of mine too.
But like, we didn't really have bullies. You know, it wasn't really a thing. There was the popular kid and then people kind of just did their thing. Someone stole my Pokemon game once. That kind of pissed me off.
We used to walk through the halls and there'd be huge crowds of kids would be walking through the halls all like shuffling and I'd go, moo! Cause it looks like a bunch of cattle being shuffled around.
So you were the bully, Ian. That's what we're hearing.
Yeah, that was how I got back at him.
Very
you guys
cool.
ever see, 30 Rock?
Mm-mm.
Where, Tina Fey's character is talking about how everyone was always mean to her in high school. And then it shows how she remembers them making fun of her. But then what actually happened is everyone else remembers it, and she was the bully, and she was
I figured out why I was bullied, though. In elementary school, I was really good friends with everybody. Then we started playing sports, and I was really bad. I had indoor eyes because I watched TV and played video games a lot. Mm. So I couldn't hit the baseball, and my parents didn't help me get any training. They said we couldn't afford it. So
all the kids that were my friends in elementary school, just, I was on their baseball team. I would strike out every time, and we were coming last every season. So in middle school comes, I'm like, why are they so mean to me? All my friends are not, they're all sitting over there, and I'm alone at this table with the nerds now. No offense, guys, if you're out there, I love you still. And now I get it. Looking back, it was because of my inability to integrate or adapt with these guys. So I don't blame them anymore.
Well, how the tables have turned, because nowadays, you know, if a kid of that age isn't good at video games because he spent too much time playing sports, he's probably going to be ostracized.
Yeah, for sure.
I disagree. I saw a post. I think this was from Alexis Ohanian, former – I think he was – I don't know if he's still with Reddit, but he was the founder of Reddit. And he said sports will be the only medium to survive because it's the only medium with no social media, digital, or internet equivalent.
I think he's right.
So when you look at like movies and stuff – it's online. It's streaming. Sports, all of that streaming and everything, but you need someone. You need the physical presence of the sport. Esports obviously exist, but still people are playing the games and actively doing things, whereas everything else is on demand. You know, sporting events are still events.
The people I know who have cable have it specifically for sports at this point. There's no other reason.
Exactly. That's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
When it comes to movies, on demand, watch what you want when you want to watch it. When it comes to sporting events, it's, well, those events are happening. When it comes to music, well, music whenever you want. You don't need to go to the concert. You can watch the concert live streamed. You can rerun sporting events for sure, but sporting events happen in the real world and people want to watch the real world versions of them. So I think that's a fair point. I think sporting will be the only thing to make it.
Yeah.
I do think esports
I'm not talking about institutional sports. I'm just saying more and more kids are playing video games and spending time on social media, and parents aren't putting as much emphasis on getting them involved in team sports.
How do you feel about that?
I don't think it's as much it's been declining over the years. So like even when I was a kid growing up in the, you know, late 90s, early 2000s, my parents would constantly talk about the fact that when they were kids, you'd be outside playing, you know, pick up baseball or whatever other sport, and my generation wasn't doing that as much. But it's interesting because that also depends on where you grew up, because whenever I'd be out in the city with my cousins, we'd actually be more likely to play outdoor sports like that in the street.
Admit it, Seamus, you were a Southside Chicago troublemaker.
That's not true, all right? I never went out there to cause no trouble.
You know what's funny?
I was always being very good.
This is really funny. You know all the gangs in Chicago are basically like religious organizations? They're like, the gangs are called the Disciples, the Bishops, the Popes.
I've heard some of the names. Yeah, that's interesting. I think they're trying to co-opt the good name of these religious and clerical titles.
Yeah. I mean, there are a bunch of
gangs.
No,
it's interesting. I mean, not the SDs, right?
What is it?
The SDs, the Saint Disciples?
Saint Disciples.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. They're out there, too.
And then there's, like, different sects of each of these of these gangs. Like, there were the Almighty Popes, the Insane Popes. And I'm like, why are they the Popes? Like, there's one Pope, you know?
What if they were like the imams or something?
Yeah, my friend was like, what's next, the choir boys?
What was your past like? Did you grow up like indoor, or were you playing a lot of sports?
I definitely played sports when I was young in elementary school and stuff. I didn't so much get into them in high school, but then actually I really got into that kind of stuff actually in college. I got into mixed martial arts and that kind of stuff, and judo. And so it's not something that was a big part of my high school, but it's something I came to appreciate a little later. So I wouldn't go to watch a ton of sporting events, but then, you know, with UFC and stuff, I'd go out and watch the big fights and that kind of thing.
I have such a mixed feeling on athletics. I know there's mad value in athletics and having kids wrestle and play and stuff, but I would play basketball and they would throw elbows at my face. And I'm like, first of all, I don't want to get my cheekbone broken. Second of all, I don't want to break that guy's cheekbone. And it's going to be one or the other if you keep throwing elbows. So I stopped playing.
Or you can skate.
Well, I fell off and dislocated my left toe, and I missed our Washington, D.C. trip. So I was like, well, F that. I'm not skating again.
Just start running.
The first day. That hurt. We used to go to cross country.
Oh, come on, dude. No pain, no gain.
I'm telling you, we would go to cross country.
Ian, this is why you got bullied.
My friends were like, probably. We went to cross country. I was like, I'm going to do cross country my sophomore year of high school. My friends are doing it. I'm doing it. We go, and they're like, okay, first thing, conditioning. 2 hours a day after school, you're going to be pumping iron, running. I'm like, what the hell am I doing? It's so much pain. I'm not enjoying a moment of it. Like, what is the purpose of running? I run to get somewhere. I don't run for fun.
I'm not a fan of running. I like skating. I don't like team sports. I like individual sports. You know, action sports are more in a sense similar to like martial arts. It's an individual. You're driving yourself. You're pursuing something that you want to attain. You accomplish your goals. There's no cheating. You can't lie. I mean, you can lie, but people don't care. They're like, you know, show me the video if you claim to do the trick. It's like, oh, I did a front board down that 15-stair rail. It's like, no, you didn't, dude. We know you're lying. We know you can't do that. That's well beyond your capabilities. But it's about you. The only thing that really matters when you're skating is, can I overcome myself every day? You're doing it for yourself to drive, to grow, to better yourself, and you get fit in the process. And it hurts all the time. It's called paying your dues. Whenever someone falls.
Paying your dues?
Paying your dues.
Oh, paying, yeah.
So whenever someone falls, I'm like, you gotta pay your dues. You don't get to, you know, launch off an 8-foot ramp 10, 12 feet in the air and then come down 300 times without taking one slam and hurting your elbow. Pay your dues, Ian. No pain, no gain.
Yeah. You were going
to
say something.
Oh, I was just going to say that's one of the great things about something like Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is it's something that teaches you, like, you can't be a jerk all the time because, like, every single day you get on the mat and someone is immediately better than you. When you step in, they're choking you out every single time. They're tapping you out all the time. And so you have to be humbled. You have to learn to tell someone, like, yep, you could have totally killed me right there. And then I have to get back on the mat with that person and learn to do it again and get better and better and better. So there's a self-improvement, but there's also a humility aspect at the same time. And the people who succeed over time, I think, are usually, you know, the people who can take that on and learn from it. I think it's really beneficial for people.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can't speak so much to jiu-jitsu, but I would agree. I think actually self-improvement and humility are indispensable to one another. I mean, you cannot improve unless you're willing to acknowledge that you're not perfect.
You guys ever see that episode of South Park about Sarcastable?
Yeah.
Yes.
So they don't want the kids getting hurt, so they're all like, they're playing football with like balloons or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
That's where we're going. Everybody gets a trophy.
I was playing flag football because I was like, well, the one sport I love is flag football because you don't have to ram into each other. And so we were throwing the ball, caught the ball, I was running so fast that I tore my MCL just by running. My mind can make my body do things that the body can't handle. Mm-hmm. And I had to learn that lesson in a bloody 2-week healing. I didn't have any health insurance. I just massaged it and held my hands on it for like 2 or 3 weeks as I limped around. And to this day, it's not the same.
Yeah, my goal when I have kids is to have them do solo sports like rollerblading or skateboarding or skiing or snowboarding, and also have them do team sports because I really feel like both of these different facets teach you different skills. And I feel like you should probably have both of them. Like, you could teach your daughters how to dance. You got to teach them all how to, like, I don't know, program computers. There's lots of fun stuff you can do. I think that sports is just one of the things that kids really need to engage with to really see how interesting physical fitness is and how good they can be at it. It gives them such a sense of accomplishment. I think it's really powerful.
Parents, in my opinion, should be making their kids learn something.
Yes.
Be it a sport or an instrument. But they should also be around other kids doing it so they have a community of peers that inspire them to, you know, better themselves. I think one of the problems with a lot of, a lot of the people, friends of mine who've been growing, who, when we were growing up, they're like, my parents make me do this or that. It's like, my mom's making me go to piano lessons. I don't want to go. Well, the reason they want to go is because we were all going to hang out at the park. If they were hanging out playing, you know, in band with a group of kids and writing songs, they'd be like, oh, yay, I'm really excited. My mom's dropping me off with my friends to play music. So that was always fascinating to me. It's like, why don't you like playing piano? I love playing guitar. I go and hang out with my friends and play the guitar and we write songs. Ah, none of your friends play piano or play music. They do other things. Mm. One of the biggest problems, you know, I noticed when I was growing up was how many parents had their kids do literally nothing. They'd be like, they're kids. It's like, well, what do you mean they're kids? Well, they're just going to go ride their bikes and play games. When I was, you know, 10, 13, I was doing Flash animation. I was making websites on Flash. I was reading news. I was developing my own video games. I was building my own computers. I was learning how to play the guitar and the drums, and I was skateboarding, all of those things. And I love doing all those things. Why was I doing them, though? For one, I'm very much, you know, always been self-driven and curious, and I wanted to learn how to do things. I wanted to, like, make these games. I wanted to make them better. I thought they were done wrong. But also, my friends, for the most part at the skate park, were skating. I had another group of friends that had a band, and if I wanted to hang out with them during band, like, I had to play an instrument. I had a bunch of friends who had computers and were on the internet and built their own computers and were hacking stuff. And I was like, oh yeah, when I come home from skating and playing music, I can go on AIM and talk to them and we can goof off. So there was actually a community that, you know, encouraged me to do this as well.
What were your guys' main, like, play things that you would do growing up?
Well, I called into talk radio when I was like in fifth grade, so I'm a very normal person. I have a very particular brain, and so yeah.
I love that.
Magic Gathering?
I tried calling to talk radio. They'd never take my calls.
I was going to say, I used to write letters to the editor when I was like 9, and some of them got published, and I was always so proud.
I used to hang out at a comic shop playing Pokemon and Magic the Gathering, and we would get there super early as soon as they opened on Saturday. We'd watch Dragon Ball Z in the background. We would play, when the Dragon Ball Z card game came out, we'd play that. We'd play Pokemon. Eventually, we stopped playing Pokemon because it was just, when the Japanese cards made it over and they weren't regulated properly, none of us had the money to compete. Mm-hmm. So we started playing Magic. We started drafting. But by around noon, we're all bored. So we'd grab our skateboards and we'd go skate around the neighborhood for a few hours. We'd leave our backpacks at the card shop, then come back later when everyone's drafting and
Do it with bikes. That was very similar. In the early days, I played a lot of video games, as much video games as I could, since I was like 3, Atari. But then my mom would be like, get off the video games! And throw me out of the house and stuff. Get out of here! You just be outside for 3 hours. So I started making movies.
You're gonna get bullied! Yeah. Go out there!
Ian, this is why you're getting bullied!
That's why you're getting bullied, Ian!
Grow your hair!
Learn to run! Oh, you only run to get
She's
somewhere?
A wonderful
you're never gonna
woman.
Get anywhere!
So I started play acting. We'd go around the neighborhood and be like, okay, I'm John and you're Lisa now.
Yeah,
and then we'd be like characters. And then I got into acting later in life. That was, but I don't think I would have done that if she didn't kick me off the video games over and over. I'm concerned about the metaverse.
It was actually a heartwarming story until the drugs.
Oh, it's still heartwarming.
Let's talk about this one other story, just totally off, just random. From TimCast.com, South Carolina schedules first execution since completion of firing squad chamber.
Whoa.
Is this a picture of it? South Carolina has scheduled its first execution of a death row inmate since completing the firing squad chamber. Now hold on there a minute, guys. Are you saying they're going to firing squad this person? They say executions in the state have been halted for the last decade due to the difficulty of obtaining the drugs used for lethal injections, leaving 35 death row inmates in limbo. Last year, they made the electric chair their primary method for carrying out death, but said that they would give inmates an option to choose death by firing squad or lethal injection. Panel, which would you prefer? Lethal injection, electric chair, firing squad. Oren.
I'm definitely going to go with firing squad for the coolness factor, though I'm pretty sure the lethal injection's probably not
the
as
most painful.
It's the most
painful.
It could be. I guess it depends on how, because the cocktail's been messed up before, right?
No. It literally is the most painful.
It is? Oh, okay.
Yeah, they paralyze you first so you can't express the pain.
Ah.
But it's my understanding, because I read a lot about it, is that lethal injection is actually a slow, excruciating death.
No, yeah. I would think that electric chair would be the worst, right?
Yeah.
But I would go with firing squad.
Your eyes, like, don't they like boil and burst out of your skull?
Oh my gosh.
Wow.
Gross.
Yeah. I think carbon monoxide poisoning, I don't know why they don't do that. That would be painless.
Yeah, they actually do. They have these suicide pods where they gradually increase the level of carbon.
Where was that?
Like in Sweden or something.
Yeah, we talked about that before. The suicide booths.
I picked firing squad.
Somebody watched too much Futurama.
Yeah, exactly.
Gross, but I'd have to take the firing squad. I think I'd take the firing squad.
What about you,
firing
Seamus?
Squad?
Yeah, honestly, I think firing squad would probably be the least painful.
Did they get rid of it because they didn't want the soldiers to feel guilty about like who hit the killing bullet?
No, that's why they do it.
Yeah, exactly. I
no
think,
one knows who actually killed the person.
Right.
I think one of them has a gun with blanks in it or something like that.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Wow.
And so you could be the one who had the
no
blanks. Yeah,
everyone
so you don't
assumes.
Know.
That's perfect.
But it's also, I guess the problem with the firing squad is like, what if they all hit your stomach?
I don't know. Heart, I'd probably do center mass right at your heart. I don't know, to be honest.
What do you guys think of, well, first of all, so I oppose the death penalty. I would prefer none of these things. And, the issue I have with it is if you've contained someone already, I don't see a reason to end their life. Like don't let them out. Obviously, if they're like serious offenders, but if they're like locked in a concrete box, what sucks is like you got to pay for them. You've got to pay for their food and their life and everything, and that's more than a lot of people deserve, that's for sure. But then it's just a scary thought to me to be, like, killing people. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but how is locking them away forever working, right? We don't do that. Like, that's the problem is that we do all this early release stuff. Mm. You know, something comes out, you have COVID issues, or, you know, someone can be rehabilitated. That would be a better option. That actually used to be, right? That was the worst penalty you could receive in a lot of cultures was, you know, you just were, you know, sent to the hinterlands and you couldn't. But now, you know, global community, it's not as big a punishment as it used to be.
I mean, let's play this game. Electric chair, lethal injection, firing squad, or they put you in a little dinghy and kick you off into the ocean.
I take the ocean on that one.
You see, most people would be like, yeah, but that's you starve
that's
to death.
Brutal.
Either you starve or you find land.
They kick you out into international waters and say good luck.
At least you got a chance.
Yeah.
What do you think other countries would say? They'd be like, dude, your murderers are washing up on our shores.
they'd go, they're not sending their best, okay? They're not sending their best to us.
I mean, I guess there's like islands. You know, you can just eat coconuts or whatever.
So what do you guys think about the death penalty? Are you for the death penalty? What do you guys think?
Nah, death penalty's bad.
You're pretty against it by nature.
No.
What, Seamus, what are you feeling?
I'm not, against, I would say. I lean towards against, but it's not something I've completely worked out.
What do you think, Orin?
Yeah, I'm pro. Like, you have a situation where people do heinous things. You need a good deterrent. You need to send a message for those things. And like I said, also the indefinite incarceration thing, I think is often crueler, but on top of that is also extremely costly and unlikely to occur in the long run as societies find ways to release these people.
Here's my question for you. How many innocent people are you willing to kill to guarantee you kill the bad guys?
Well, again, this is always the question of all rule enforcement throughout all society, right? How many innocent people are we willing to lock away in prison? How many innocent people are we willing to kill? And the answer is you're always going to have fault. Any legal system is going to have some level of failure.
I get it. But how many innocent people would you personally be willing to kill to make sure the bad guys get killed?
Again, I don't have a hard number, but it wouldn't be zero.
But it's greater than one.
Yeah.
You see, I have a problem with that, right? If there's but one righteous person. I don't trust the state. I don't trust people like Kamala. We've seen how she's acted towards people who should have been released from prison, people who had evidence exonerating them, and her department was like, we're going to keep them anyway. The state has more often shown that it's willing to cover up its faults because they don't want people to realize they execute innocent people. So they'll lie about it and execute innocent people. And it is better that 100 guilty persons escape than one innocent person suffer. My solution to that, I suppose, is called the Second Amendment. I look at what the Founding Fathers had in mind. Don't have innocent people suffer. Everybody gets guns. And I'm like, okay, well, that means there may be accidents. There may be conflict. But you leave more up to the individuals to defend themselves. It's their personal responsibility. And you leave more up to the state. I mean, the state backs away from potentially killing innocent people, which it has, even in the Founding Fathers' time. The issue I find here with the death penalty is if the amount of innocent people is greater than one, then the state is murdering innocent people. And I don't think it's worth it if you've locked someone in a box. They can't get out. The worst case scenario in this circumstance is you got an innocent person locked in a box, but at least you're not killing them. And making an innocent person walk down death row to an electric chair or a firing squad or a lethal injection, because just imagine being that person and them saying, hey, look, we get it. You might be innocent, but hey, system's got to do what the system does. Nah, I say screw that, man. Lock the person in a box. Lock them away. There's 35 people. It sucks, but my attitude is I would personally rather pay what I could to keep these people locked up permanently than to be party to the execution of an innocent person.
But imagine,
it's not easy though.
But imagine you're that family, right? You're the family of that victim. And now you have to watch this person, you know, spend 5-10 years and then getting out early.
I don't believe in retribution, so that's, you know, I don't care.
I think you should. I think that's part of justice. I think that when you take someone's life, you should pay for it. I think that when you hurt another person's family, that's something you should pay for. I think justice should be retributive in many ways.
Like eye for an eye? How far do you go? Eye for an eye?
I mean, again, you know, obviously you can get lost in how harsh you can get, but I think that a system that says, oh, this is only for deterrence sake, or this is only, you know, it should never be retributive is outweighing the rights of the criminal more than the rights of the victims. And I think that sends a message. And I think over time, it always devolves into a scenario where people are getting fewer sentences, released early. They're being soft on these things. And you inevitably end up in a situation that we are now, where we have crimes that aren't punished in many of these jurisdictions.
I don't think those things correlate. Like the reason criminals are being released is because the left is advocating for their release for stupid reasons. We should have many people should be in prison much longer and many people should be in prison much less. Nonviolent drug offenses. It's like, come on. But then you get violent offenders who commit murder and get out in a few years. Now that's a problem. I don't think retribution makes sense. An eye for an eye leaves the whole world blind. Everyone's got a grievance against somebody else and they all want retribution for their perceived slights. And what happens when a victim falsely accuses someone or wrongly because they're emotionally driven and driven by passion instead of logic? So the state often, it's supposed to try its best to sort the facts and make sure that it's proven beyond a reasonable doubt. Often they do. Often we've seen circumstances where people like Kamala are willing to leave people to rot in prison even if they're innocent. Her department, her office did this. That's what's been reported. That's how it's been reported. And then I'm supposed to sit back and just trust the state that they're not making mistakes and that the retribution is just. What happens if the state executes an innocent person because the family wanted retribution? Let's say a family member of mine is on death row and the family's like, they did it. I know they did it. And so they say, we demand retribution. And the state says, and we're going to grant that retribution. Execute my friend or family member. And then a day later, evidence comes out exonerating them. Am I entitled to retribution against the executioner? Do I get to put him on death row because he killed my loved one? The answer should be yes, right? Where's my retribution against the state for killing an innocent person that I loved? You don't get it. So the problem is there is no retribution. The state kills people to shut people up. They let rioters riot because they don't want to call, because they don't care. They put innocent people in prison in these riots. They arrest innocent people because they want to avoid riots. This is the problem with the state. You can't trust them. You can trust them sometimes for some things. You can cross your fingers. But if the issue is they are not completely trustworthy, then we can't allow the state to take extreme or permanent actions because we can't ever confirm 100% what they're doing is right.
You shouldn't trust anyone, really, in that situation. That's up to you to survive on this reality floor. I used to be very pro-death penalty without a question. Like, yeah, if they're a killer and they're not going to stop, kill them. Get them out of here. But then I started to think about the Nazis, and, man, they would just execute people at will. And so with the Soviets. And like, so I have a very American blinder on when I think about things. And Michael Malice has really opened my eyes to this. So, as well as Luke Rutkowski, coming from the Soviet Union. Their families are from the Soviet Union. It's like, yo, the state is not like the benevolent God that you think it is. I was really indoctrinated growing up.
But wouldn't you say that different governments do things for different reasons? So like, regardless of how you feel about the death penalty, couldn't you say, well, you know, when Stalin and Hitler were killing people for bad reasons, that didn't necessarily mean there couldn't be good reasons for another government to do it. And again, this is someone who I've acknowledged I don't really have a fleshed out position.
Yeah,
on the death
you
penalty.
Could kill for a good, I think you could kill for a good reason, to be honest.
There's a scaling question in the death penalty, and it pertains to war, right? Someone like Hitler or Stalin. Yeah, those people die. And those people die because you're in war and they're actively killing and massacring by the millions and you're trying to actively stop them. My question is, if someone's been actively stopped already, and, you know, it's like I suppose there's the great philosophical question has been asked, answered in many ways in many of these Batman comics. The Injustice storyline. You guys fans of DC at all?
Mm-hmm.
You know, when Joker, depending on which version of the storyline, Joker drugs Superman, Superman kills Lois. Superman loses it, and he's like to Batman, if you just killed this man, these people wouldn't have died. Or there's like another story. I can't remember which one it is, but, you know, Joker plants a nuke and blows up Metropolis. And Superman's like, you could have killed him and saved millions. And then Damian Wayne, this is in the video game. I think it's from the comic as well. He's like, you've had every opportunity to stop these murderers, and you don't. Batman won't do it. And they get out, they murder again. And he's like, enough. And then, the Justice League goes dark, and they're like just executing criminals and stuff. There's great philosophical questions about how to handle things. My issue ultimately comes down to, I don't trust the state. I've seen a lot of people. I don't trust them. These big cities are run by corrupt lunatics. And I think Kamala Harris should terrify people.
Yeah, we have laws in place, so you don't have to trust the state. The law, you're supposed to trust the law.
Yeah. Oh, he was about to say something.
I was just going to say that your first gulp of inept government will turn you into a libertarian. But I think at the bottom of that glass, competent government is the key. Because it's very tempting to say, when you look at a government that's corrupt and inept, to say, just get government out of everything. That's the easy thing, right? This is what the right has been doing and libertarians have been doing for many years. We'll just get my kids out of the government school. Then I don't have to worry what's being taught there. We'll just get my kids away from this influence, you know, what's happening in the media. Well, I'll just start my own business, and then I don't have to care what's going on with these things. Saying that if we just keep exiting each one of these arenas, that eventually, you know, we'll be able to solve the problem. But the issue is that never solves the problem. They always end up coming after you. You never just get to get away, right? And so the easy out is to say, we just take the power of government away, right? This is what we're taught, is that we just reduce the power of government, we put checks and balances, a limit on the power of government, and then therefore we don't have to worry what government does, because there's the system that holds it in check for us. The truth is that at the end of the day, that doesn't work. That never works. The government always retains that power. Someone's always making these decisions of the state, and they are always taking that power. They're always increasing and centralizing the power. The question is, who wields it? You want someone competent. You don't just want to pretend like you can run away forever.
All right, we got to go to Super Chats. If you haven't already, smash that like button, subscribe to this YouTube channel, share the show everywhere you can if you really want to help us out. We are completely marketed through grassroots means. I was actually thinking maybe we should make a commercial for the show and do like our first ever marketing run. We've never done anything like that. Maybe we'll do like an ad spot on YouTube or something, or some other podcasts. But I don't know. I always just assumed if people really liked the show, they would just share it because they liked it. So if you do, there you go. Also, check out TimCast.com. Become members. Support our work directly. New episodes of the members-only TimCast IRL show Monday through Thursday at 8 p.m. We have a huge library. Go watch all of it. Let's read some of these super chats. We got Jeremy Gardner, who says, I am a server of 15 years and loved your conversation about servers last week. Tips have everything to do with culture and nothing to do with race. I can tell what someone will tip me 99 out of 100 times. People can never, I always tip insane amounts, like 200, 300%. And it's funny, you know, we went out to eat today and the servers were actually like, do you want to take this group? And the other lady was like, I guess, sure, I'll take them. And she was like, okay, thanks. And then I'm like, wow, I wonder if that lady who's like, you like gave up us as a group regrets it because we tipped like $200. And so the other lady was probably just like, yes. And then the other server was like, no. That's how it goes, man. You never know. All right. Adam Noel says, hey, TimCast crew, my name is Adam Noel, and I just emailed you guys a song to spin the UFO. Please look for political punk rock opera. Tim, get ready. Well, all right. We'll take a look. You want to write that down?
I got it.
Blueheart says, her name is Stretchin' Gretchen. What, is that a reference to doing yoga or something?
Gretchen Whitmer? I don't know.
Most likely.
Maybe she
She does yoga?
I don't know.
Interesting.
I'm just trying to veer away from the dirty thoughts. Oh.
That's fair.
Chris Larson says, hey, Tim, I live in South Dakota, and Christy Noem banned teaching CRT in schools. Not sure if you knew or not, but I think it's very interesting. I suppose the issue is they just go, well, we're not teaching critical race theory. We're just applying critical race theory to what we teach.
Yep, praxis.
Yep, praxis. That's right. Jason Fisher says, speaking of Dennis Prager, you should have someone from Prager U in the show. In the show. We could have we certainly could. I don't know. Who should we have from Prager? Dennis himself? That'd be great.
That'd be great. He's smart.
I've had Will Witt in my channel. He's a good guy.
Oh, yeah, Will Witt.
Oh, yeah.
Don's Herald says, your discussion on religion yesterday was the best I've seen yet. If you want a thought-provoking look into the afterlife, check out C.S. Lewis's The Great Divorce, easily my favorite short story. Yes, yesterday with Andrew Clavin, we talked religion over at TimCast.com in the members only segment.
It was really, really good.
Yeah.
It was intense.
It was a lot of fun.
I love The Great Divorce. C.S. Lewis is one of my favorite authors of all time.
Genius.
What's it about?
It's about this guy who goes on a trip and he doesn't really realize it, but it turns out he's in hell and he's been traveling to heaven. And as he goes through this, like, slowly little bits of his pride are taken away as, like, the angel reveals the things that are holding him back into hell. And he starts seeing all the foolish things he's been trying to hold on to. It's really excellent.
Oh, wow. Cool. Young Pei Chang says, hi, guys. Oren, I've read your tweets retweeted for Michael Malice, and I've referenced some of your videos when trying to explain to other folks about the definition of a midwit.
One of my bigger videos was on was explaining midwittery and kind of what that means and where that comes from. We're in the middle of a midwit epidemic. Yes. So
do you have an elevator pitch on midwits?
Yeah, basically a midwit is someone who is just slightly above average intelligence, and so because they're just slightly above average, it's one of the things that defines them. Like, they're smarter than most people. Like, they're smart people, but they're never the smartest person in the room. And because they're never the smartest person in the room, they're always reaching for it. They always want to prove themselves. The smartest person in the room, you know, they know what they're doing. It's like someone who knows how to fight. You know, they don't need to prove that. They know. They don't have to go around talking tough because they know it. Midwits in the same scenario. And so because of that, they like to learn things like little bits of language. This is why, you know, wokeness and progressivism is so attractive to a midwit, because by keeping up on the jargon, they can look more intelligent than they are. They can use that as a weapon.
Have you seen that video where they ask everyone to judge people based on how they look on their intelligence? And there's one woman where she's just like, I can tell you're not very smart. And then they all take IQ tests, and then they're told to sit down from smartest to least smart. And the woman who was really cocky turns out to be like the stupidest person.
Oh,
yeah,
snap.
That wouldn't surprise
me
at all.
That was funny.
Oren, do you think that the people in Bill Maher's audience were midwits? Because that was the first thing I thought of.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the things about midwittery is, like, when you learn things when you're young, you learn them at a low resolution, right? You learn very simple things about them. Sometimes they're actually completely wrong, but you have to learn kind of a wrong version before you, as a young person, you can eventually grasp the more complex version. What midwits do is they learn to deconstruct that child's version of understanding things like God or the history of America. Like, they treat and they learn to deconstruct that stuff, and they think because they're deconstructing the simplistic version, they're very intelligent. And they're rewarded in the education educational system and popular culture for doing this. And so they keep doing it even to adulthood. They never learn about the more complicated version, but they think they're very intelligent.
They're smart enough to know they're not smart enough.
Yeah.
And so there was a guy that my friends knew who was developmentally disabled. But he was smart enough to know he was. And it was like a weird position because like he was limited in what he could do, but he was also cognizant of that fact. So it's like a lot of these midwits are that way. They're on Twitter. They're not successful people. They know they're smarter than most people, but they're not smart enough to run a business or survive or succeed. So they end up just angry. They deserve more, don't they? And so I think you see a lot of that with the woke activists. They assume that the system must be broken because certainly someone as smart as them should have money and wealth and fame and power. Instead, they got 20,000 followers on Twitter and they can't pay their bills.
Yeah, it's a problem with public school system. It makes people feel like a success when they get all A's, but man, they're not prepared for the real world.
All right. Young says, Tim, Elijah Schaefer said he will be doing things in Nashville next week too. Are you guys going to be doing something together there? Also, Seamus, your appearance on Matt Frad's channel helped me impress a new Catholic friend.
Oh, well, thank you so much.
I think we are.
We have plans to bring Elijah on one of those evenings.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
Correct.
I love that guy, man.
Mr. Schaefer. John Boyle says, yo, Tim, when will we be able to watch the IRL and members segment live over at timcastirl.com? Ooh. The members segments are recorded and then uploaded. But as for the show itself, well, you know what we need? We need a web dev backend and like webmaster kind of person.
Yeah, we do.
We need someone who knows how to do all the code, how to handle all the WordPress plugins, integrations, API, all that stuff. So we're actually looking. So I guess jobs at timcast.com, and then hopefully someone here can filter through that and try and figure out, you know, how to get somebody a job. Because we are actually in what's the right way to describe it? We need to hire someone like by Monday.
Yeah.
Fast. Yeah, and the tech we're working on with the foundation that we're building is it's still pre-alpha, so it's like just too early to do that with timcast.com just yet, but I would really like to do that eventually.
All right, wait, I saw another super chat and I have to find it. Oh, now I feel bad. It was great because someone else replied to the super chat. Oh well, maybe if I go through it again I can find it. Give me a quick second here, guys.
Lydia, I just want to tell you I love you, by the way, man. You're awesome.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, okay, it's right here. So Jeff Leinberger says, thanks for getting me through the 2.5 hours of traffic every day here in California. Woo. What do you think is a good platform for more art-based political content? Rumble doesn't seem suited for that. Mm. I don't know. Seamus, you're the artist.
I was looking for this.
He wasn't even paying attention.
No, by the way, I found it. It's from Jubilee. It's a video where they have strangers rank each other's intelligence on a scale of 1 to 6. It's hysterical. Okay.
What's a good platform for art-based political content?
Oh man, I mean, I'm still using YouTube. Look at me. And it's difficult
and
to
Patreon.
Well, we're working on a paywall on the website now. So give me a break. But so it's difficult to format for different social media websites too. So like the aspect ratios change when we do YouTube. I can just upload the videos in 1920 by 1080. When I do TikTok, I have to reanimate all the characters so they're pretending they have Tourette's.
So the follow-up there was from Adrian Contreras, who says, I feel you, Jeff. I'm on the 101 right now by Thousand Oaks. It's brutal. Shout out to our friends who are stuck in traffic together listening to the show.
The struggle.
All right. Austin L. says, hey, Tim, have you noticed we keep saying woke companies hate us and they never deny it? Huh. They never say, of course we don't hate our customers. It's just the silence of them not disagreeing with that statement.
Poor deplorables.
Yeah, they hate their customers.
They do.
They really do. It's sad, but I do kind of feel like a lot of the stuff is falling apart. They've got some new Marvel shows coming out, and they're just like, it's lost its luster.
Yeah.
I feel like the Marvel movies, they're probably going to make money, but we've been culturally stagnant for a long time.
Man, that Jeremy's Razors commercial was awesome. And it had, last I looked at it, over 7 million views. You want to talk about, as long that stuff is degrading, but you can also see the growth, where it's growing. And that's with Daily Wire, man.
Think about how much Daily Wire is going to make off of, what do they have, like 70,000 Razor subscribers now or something?
It's
ridiculous.
Wild.
Oh, I don't know.
Man.
That's awesome.
They're probably making so much money off of that. It's like the Daily Wire shuts down because they're like, well, we were making hundreds of millions off of the Razors and we just figured we didn't need media anymore.
Yeah, that's way easier than content, right? Yeah, just crank those out.
Crank them out, huh? No, but they wouldn't do that. They're going to do more. They're doing kids shows. Jay says, Seamus, are you going down to Nashville too? You should have a debate with Ben using your impression of him. Have Candace be the judge should be a load of laughs.
Okay, so here's what actually would happen if I went down to Nashville and talked to Ben Shapiro as Ben Shapiro. He would get so intimidated by my ability to impersonate him, he'd have an identity crisis, and then he would become Freedom Tunes. And if Ben Shapiro was making Freedom Tunes instead of me, that would be a disaster. Okay, folks?
Yeah,
It would be like you both would be mirroring each other and saying the same things. And then, like, energy would start to mass and a singularity would form.
It'd be recursive.
And it would be like, yeah. Seamus, stop!
But you're like, it would be the,
I can't, it's too late, gang.
Honestly, it's too late. It would be like the dialogue, it would be like the dialogue-based equivalent to that scene in Duck Soup where the mirror breaks and the guy on the other side of the mirror is trying to imitate Groucho Marx. Have you guys not seen Duck Soup? This is classic comedy. Oh. This is like, this is incredible stuff.
Oh,
yeah.
There's a great scene
where I believe it's Chico is trying to sneak through Groucho's house or the character Groucho's playing's house, and the mirror breaks, and then he's in the mirror dressed as him trying to imitate all of his actions as he walks by.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yes.
That would be me and Ben.
I am familiar. Okay. Yeah, Seamus will be coming down.
Yes.
That's right.
Jacob says, you've talked about how strong your Magic the Gathering commander decks are. What commanders do you run? I've got Kiki Jiki.
It's insane, by the way.
And I think that may be one of the most powerful because...
The deck is.
I mean, it was crazy. We were playing recently, and I was monoscrewed. And then Ian was, like, doing really well. And then I got... What's that troll who generates mana for health? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, you pay 3 life for 1 red. It's insane.
And then I won, just like that.
It's so stupid.
I was like, I'm at 3, but you're dead.
I play Urza, but it's not even fun anymore because I have to take, like, 39 moves in one turn, which I like, but it just ended up ruining the game with my own joy overload. What about you, Oren?
Yeah, this is the problem with Commander. It degenerates into, you know, it's supposed to be a fun format of multiplayer, and everybody just tries to end up winning on turn one. So my Commander deck's pretty casual because I try to play with friends that keep it pretty casual. I've got, I think Mariki Baru is the way to pronounce it, where she just steals all your permanents, and then when she untaps, she kills them, so you can just tap her and untap her over again to take over the board.
Oh, that's fun. Nathan Devin says, huge fan, just got kicked out of the Air Force, active duty for refusing the jab. Yo, that's crazy, man. Like, during a war in Eastern Europe, too. That sounds like a really bad idea.
Huh.
Well, there we go. Christina H. says, thank you, Ian, but that summary was a little off. 1 second after is about a man trying to save his family and small town after the U.S. is hit with an EMP attack, inspired me to buy emergency food and prep before it was cool.
Oh, wow.
Okay,
oh, wow.
Thanks. I just read what it was on the, I think it was on Amazon or something, what I read.
Yes.
Thank you for clarifying.
I recently, when they announced the food shortages, like we've already got emergency food, but considering how many people work here, like we don't really have enough, but I bought a bunch. Cause I think inflation's gonna hit, and you're like, if nothing ends up happening, the worst case scenario is just eat food. So I always recommend people take care of themselves. Take care of themselves, my friends. Michael Scott Matthew says, are you also anti-circumcision, Tim? If we oppose any permanent physical changes to a child's body when they can't consent informally? Yes, I think that's wrong. I think it's I don't understand why we still have that. You know, whatever. But I will give a shout out to who are those YouTube animators? Flashgits.
Mm.
With one of the funniest videos where it's the feminist and she like goes to an aquarium and demands a job. And they're like, are you a biologist? And she's like, she gets all angry at screaming about sexism. And then in the end, she's like screaming about patriarchy and smashing up and rioting. And then all of a sudden, men's rights activists show up. And they're like, oh no, men's rights activists. And then the guy goes, we want our foreskins back!
Oh my gosh.
The show is so funny.
That's fair.
Yeah. Yeah. But, I don't think we should be surgically altering children.
Yeah.
You know?
Cannot consent.
I've heard that it can really mess kids' minds up, that amount of pain at that early age.
Well, there's some nuance here. You know, a lot of people obviously pointed out cleft lip surgery, reconstructive surgery for burns and stuff. No, I get that. Someone mentioned that kids will have like ears that stick out and they'll get them pinned.
Yeah,
I disagree with that too.
Yeah, that's weird, right?
I don't like it. If you got big ears, you got big ears.
It's okay.
I don't know, man. Just like kids want to make fun of you for having big ears, but like, I guess, I don't know. Like kids got to be taught to be confident in themselves and to be ashamed of themselves. Telling a kid, your ears are ugly, we better get you to a doctor to surgically alter that, instead of saying, tell those kids to shut up, who cares?
Yeah.
You're better.
That's an opportunity to teach them. I was going to say, too, that I learned a while ago that they used to not administer pain medicine when they did circumcisions. And I was like, excuse me?
There was a belief that children couldn't feel pain, or infants at that age couldn't feel pain, so they did all sorts of medical procedures without anesthetizing them first.
Ugh. That's like lifelong trauma. It's got to be.
Horrible.
James says, Tim, fitness is a specific evolutionary term that refers to how many offspring an organism has that survives to reproduce. It never had anything to do with the smartest or strongest. Ah, well, touche. I stand corrected. Good point. Young says, Tim, if Bill Maher is lazy, what of David French? He's sleeping. Scott says, let he who hath no rifle sell his Xbox and buy one. Oh. Jesus, probably.
Probably, yeah.
But he did say, if you don't have a sword, sell your cloak.
Sell your cloak and buy one, yeah.
That is fascinating to me. Because it's funny when people make fun of the right for buying guns, and they're like, Jesus would, you know, tell them and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, oh, he said to get a sword, man. But I think it's important. If you can't defend yourself, your friends, and your family from evil, then what do? Lay down and just get steamrolled?
Yeah, that's the idea.
Something
that's
doesn't
what they
sound
want.
Right.
That's what they want you to think. Roll over, get steamrolled,
that
Tim.
That story doesn't sound
Turn
right.
Turn the other cheek.
That he just let him take. It just doesn't sound right, man. Something's fishy.
All right. CKCC Chris says, well, we should be concerned and learn our lessons from Nuremberg, but that concern should not stand in the way of getting to the truth and holding those who have perverted our republic accountable to the laws we know to be right. Right. I think someone brought up Nuremberg. I think you did.
What was it about the Nuremberg trial?
I was thinking about
Jesus, pardon me.
No, it was when we were talking about McCarthyism and you said, I don't want to, you know, have a tit for tat.
Yeah.
Start doing investigations or whatever.
Important thing to remember about McCarthy, you know, the government and the entertainment industry actually was full of communists.
Yeah.
That's true. An important thing to remember.
Catwell says, are y'all planning any meetups while in Nashville for your fans and TimCast members? Our family are huge Freedom Tunes fans, and I'd love the chance to chat with Ian about graphene and abolishing the Fed. So I don't know if we have any direct plans right now. In the future, we are planning perhaps monthly excursions where we send the mobile studio out to various cities, and we will do – what we want to do is Friday night IRL live. So we do the show – on a stage in a big theater somewhere in a city.
Love it.
And so also, thank you so much for the shout out.
And also, check out this shirt that somebody sent me.
Oh, snap. I love it.
What does it say?
Ask me about graphene.
No, don't. It's a trap.
It's a large, though. If you're going to send me shirts, send me mediums.
But how cool would it be if we came to your city and then on a Friday night at a, you know, 1,000-seater venue or whatever, everybody came in and we were doing the show live on a stage and, you know, like Alex Jones would be there.
It feels like the way it's supposed to be.
Like we should do it.
Yeah.
And then it would make a live studio audience, like how they do all the other late night talks.
And we can do real questions, man. That's cool. Because you pay to get in, and then that's basically your super chat. Hopefully you'll be one of the people that can talk.
I think people would be able to yell. I don't know if we would be able to do audience questions, though.
Yeah, be a instead of super chat. Or we could do super chats.
Super chats allow us to screen from trolls is the issue, right?
Yeah.
Just a bunch of people getting up are going to start yelling stuff, and I don't know how I'd be able to handle that.
But to be fair, I feel like we would handle that kind of adversity really well. And with Matt Walsh, it's always interesting when people try to troll him and it never works. So.
Yeah, but there's a difference between being live and having people go up and scream a bunch of racial slurs as opposed to someone asking you a question that's hard.
Yeah, so one of the things that they do with Matt's events is they make sure that the people who get in are like really good faith actors. It's hard, I know.
It's tough. Yeah. You know, I don't know. We don't want people troll and people protest.
Maybe for the after show, we could do audience questions and then upload.
Oh, good point.
Yeah, we would
definitely be able to do that.
That'd be fun.
Yeah. So, yes. All right. Brendan says, you've convinced me to watch Star Trek. What is the best series to start with? From what you've said, Next Generation seems pretty legit. But look, that's my demographic. That's my age range. When I was a little kid, you know, I'm 3 or 4. This show is on the air and I'm sitting on the couch and my dad's watching it. So I grow up watching this show over several years. For a lot of people, the original series is
you know. It was the original for me, but and the second one was cheesy. Next Gen was cheesy at first, but I think it was season 2. This
Riker's
comes up a lot.
Beard.
It is by far the superior Star Trek of those two. I didn't even watch the other ones. I couldn't get into them. That's Next Generation is amazing. That's why you still see Brent Spiner and, you know, what's his name?
Spiner.
Geordi. Geordi doing commercials and stuff. Geordi, I call it.
LeVar Burton.
LeVar, dude.
Come on, man.
He taught Geordi, you to read, and this is all you can do for
reading right. Rainbow. Shout out.
Come on.
LeVar.
And you said Steiner.
Oh, is it not Brett Steiner? What's his last
name? Spiner.
Spiner. Spiner. Sorry, right? Brett. You were great in Independence Day.
Boo.
Oh, yeah. And then they brought him back in the sequel, and they made him gay. You see that one?
What? No. Did they make him gay in that?
Yeah.
That slipped past me.
Yeah, he's him and the other scientists end up getting married or something.
He was amazing in the first one.
Yeah, it's weird to me that they added that to the story that didn't need to be there because he wasn't like we don't. I understand if they make a movie and there's a protagonist. And the protagonist is gay and his love is a motivation. I don't understand when they just take a random ancillary character and then add a gay relationship as a plot point that doesn't change the plot at all.
Oh, I understand. It's to normalize, right. It's their whole goal. But also, that film, I forgot that that happened, and I think that's because the film was just so forgettable overall that couldn't take anything away from it.
Yeah, that was not good. The funny thing is, they recast, what's her face? What's the actress's name? She was on Arrested Development. She was in Scott Pilgrim. She's the voice of Katara. You guys know who I'm talking about,
the
right?
Young girl or the sister? The older woman.
In what we mean?
In Arrested Development.
She was.
I'll look it up.
I can't remember. What
secretary?
Character. No, someone's going to chat it. We're gonna get it. Yeah, she's the voice of Katara on an Avatar: The Last Airbender. I'm waiting for someone to give me the answer, but there's like a minute lag or whatever. Did you find out what her name is?
Mae Whitman.
Mae Whitman. Right. She was originally the little girl in Independence Day, and they recast her because they were like, we want an attractive woman, and they considered her frumpy, I guess, or whatever. That's how Hollywood works, man. Yep. That's how Hollywood works. Logan says so many 20s tonight. I know.
Good time.
Great show.
Critical success.
A lot of ones as well. A lot of people didn't really agree on a lot of things.
Play hard.
Pollyanna Forever says, finally saw Freedom Tunes and the Crazy Chicken Show. Epic. Yo, we're consistently getting around like 200 concurrent viewers on Chicken City Live.
Thank you.
When we run these commercials on Tucker, it's going to be epic. So we have a functional commercial, but it's a good commercial. And that's the problem. It like accurately advertises Chicken City. And it says go to the website, and it shows the chickens, and it shows them running around. And I'm like, no. The commercial needs to be stupid. It needs to be like us arguing with the chickens, like dramatic scenes. The roosters like chasing after us, like fake explosions. Like,
take me back! Like on my knees begging for forgiveness.
We need like 5 seconds of Ian explaining graphene to the chickens.
Yes.
As they all sit around you, like, confused.
I'll give you an hour. You can just cut the 5 seconds out you need.
Chickens, listen.
By the way, I want to thank you for finally watching Freedom Tunes. They finally watched it, and you can too. Go over to youtube.com/freedomtunes right now. Subscribe. Hit the notification bell. We got some more cartoons coming. I think you guys are going to love them.
Son of Man says Ian is the smartest guy because he thinks outside the conventional box. Mm-hmm. Y'all need to leave him alone.
The intelligence is weirdly defined. I'm a piece of a puzzle. So in the wrong puzzle, I don't fit. I just happen to kind of fit in this one.
Also, Ian doesn't want to be left alone. He wants to discuss these things. He wants to argue. He wants to have his view challenged.
You know me.
Yeah, exactly.
Ian's the wild card, man.
Let me have it.
He often says things that make us all question our preconceived conceptions. Our preconceptions. Preconceptions.
Question
yourself, but don't question yourself too much. I made that mistake, and it can drive you insane. Mm. So you have to find a reality that you enjoy and then find a community that agrees with it and then work together.
Stay grounded.
All right. We'll just grab a couple more here because we actually have to get in the car. We're driving out to Nashville now. So let's just grab a couple here. All right. Tommy Boy says, how do you feel about Jen Psaki potentially going to MSNBC? To me, it seems like it's going to be a complete and absolute dumpster fire. Does she even have any journalism experience? I don't care. I expect it. I mean, Sean Spicer, he went to Newsmax, right?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
Yeah, where did she go?
She went to Fox.
Yeah. Jen Psaki going to MSNBC, I'm just like, that's exactly what MSNBC is. It's partisan. They love it.
Yeah, we know
Sean
that.
Sean Spicer went to Newsmax. It's partisan. They love it. The press secretaries aren't, they're pundits. It's what they do. They spin. They spin on behalf of the White House.
Yeah, no, they can do it on news.
Yeah, exactly. They'll do the same thing. I don't watch that stuff. You know, I think Sean Spicer is better in a lot of ways than Jen Psaki, but I think, in terms of skill, Jen Psaki's pretty good at her job.
Yeah.
She can spin, man.
That's her job.
Yeah.
I mean,
you know, and she does it. And everyone rolls their eyes, but when they make fun of her for being circle back Jen, I'm like, you realize that works for the establishment press, right? Mm. She ignores questions and they never question it. She's got them wrapped up. You know, she knows how to manipulate, but I will be fair. It's easy when the press is already in the bag for you. So she can stand there and do nothing. And then she grumbles because she calls on Peter Ducey as like the token conservative guy.
And he roasts her.
Yep.
It's great.
All right. We got a couple more. The base badass? I'm running for Texas State Senate in San Antonio. I just wanted to thank everyone for the encouragement and inspiration to run. Hey, right on, man. But we don't have your name, but good luck.
Yeah, cool. Good luck.
And last, we'll read this one. Chris Adkins says, I am Volseferon, follower of the beanie and woofershire of Chicken City. Congratulations, good nice. Sir. All right, everybody. If you haven't already, you must smash the like button. Do it for Ian. if Ian doesn't get 10,000 likes, he'll cry.
But if I
Seamus
do,
Seamus will get mad.
He'll cry,
and then Seamus is punching holes in walls, and then Ian is crying, and then I got to deal with it. And then oh man, you know,
I can hear it from the other room. I'm not able to fall asleep because Ian's bawling his eyes out. I start punching the wall, and he starts crying even harder.
I told you that.
If you listen really, really carefully in Freedom Tunes, you can actually hear Ian crying in the background half the time.
I'm telling you, I'm doing sit ups. It's crunches. I'm doing crunches. Come on.
Go to timcast.com, become a member, help support our work. All of our whole library of members-only segments are available. You can search for people and watch all this awesome stuff. You can also check out Chicken City. Right now the chickens are sleeping, but if you go to youtube.com/chickencity, you can watch that. But also check out Pop Culture Crisis, which is just search YouTube for Pop Culture Crisis. Subscribe. It's mostly cultural topics, but it's a similar style podcast hosted by Brett Dasovic. And we're going to be doing a bunch of promotion for that relatively soon because the show's, you know, gotten its footing and it's growing and getting more views. So we're going to start promoting it. So check that out. You can follow the show at TimCastIRL. You can follow me at TimCast. Oren, do you want to shout anything out?
Yeah, definitely. Make sure to check out my YouTube channel, Oren McIntyre, on Twitter. I think on Twitter I've got the link tree or the Find My Friends where you can find all my stuff. I've got channels on Odyssey and Rumble. I've got Subscribestar, all that stuff. So go ahead and follow me there.
Nice. I run a YouTube channel called Freedom Tunes. We make cartoons. I think you guys are going to like them. Go check that out. Subscribe. Hit the notification bell or Ian will cry again. And I'll punch
the like button. Find the white pill. It's in you, man. You got it.
That's right. You got it there.
That. He's already fighting back tears. We're 1,000 likes away.
It's natural.
We got this. We got
And we're going to be driving to Nashville. He's going to be crying the whole time.
I'm
going to
be checking the video and watching the comments all night, you guys, so keep making them.
I'm going to get a call from Seamus, and I'm going to answer it, and I'm just going to hear,
Here's the thing. Like, I know punching the walls is only going to make him cry harder, but I'm so angry at that point that self-destruction is perfectly acceptable to me. It's just...
I got pads for the walls. Sound pads.
Yeah.
Sound pads.
Yeah. We are all in padded rooms over here. Anyway, you guys should check out Pop Culture Crisis because I am on there every Wednesday except this Wednesday. So if you like what I have to say, go check it out. Brett is an awesome host and he does a great job researching for the show. You guys may follow me on Twitter at Sour Patch Lids. I am also on Minds.com and I also have sourpatchlids.me. So follow me on all those spots.
We will see all of you over at TimCast.com or Chicken City, and we'll be in Nashville all next week. We're actually going to be there first thing in the morning because we're driving all throughout the night, and then I guess not sleeping.
I guess.
And then I have to work through the weekend because that's the point of being down there to do work. So that'll be fun. But maybe we'll see you around in Nashville. Thanks for hanging out, and we'll see you all next time.
Bye, guys.